Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. Feel alright. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you precious contraband and ancient tales from distant lands.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we're live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. It is Wednesday morning, Wildcard Wednesday. You may welcome yeah, that's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And we got another Know Your Onion coming up this morning, as we do after the 4:30 news. And we'll get into that. That's where Tom will ask you questions. Well, he'll actually he'll read you a news headline, and you have to guess whether it's a real one or from The Onion. Because The Onion is a satirical, funny newspaper. And you'll win prizes. We'll take our first two callers after the 4:30 news. First two will be our contestants for the morning. They'll play a round of Know Your Onion, and everybody's a winner. So that's coming up later on. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, our good friend Rod Pyle is with us. He is an author, a journalist, editor-in-chief at Ad Astra magazine for the National Space Society, and he's an outer space expert. Lots of space talk. Always a lot of fun when Rod is here. So we'll talk about space. And if you guys have any questions that are space-related, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. That's the number for talk and text, and also for your Wild Card Wednesday requests. We are going to talk about some celebrities are weirdly connected, and some really crazy stories about how they're connected. We're also going to talk about the ways that movies have saved lives, and some crazy reasons why people have quit their jobs. Mickey Mouse turned 51 the other day, so we're going to talk about some times that Mickey Mouse got banned. And we didn't get to this yesterday, but we're going to get to it this morning. The Chicago Sun-Times put out a thing called Chicagopedia Volume 1, and it's kind of like Chicagoese. It's the way we talk. It's things that you need to know that are exclusive to Chicago. It's a very unique city, and we'll talk about all of that stuff that's in the Chicagopedia Volume 1. So that's all coming up. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text, and for your Wild Card Wednesday requests. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. You can stay connected with us on our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Nick D Show. And also download our podcast. Subscribe. Every single second of every single show is podcast. And you can subscribe. It's free. Go to iTunes or where you get your podcasts, or go to WGNradio.com. And yeah, so subscribe. It's free. It'll automatically be sent to your device, and you can listen at your leisure, bro. So that's all happening this morning right here on 720 WGN. Let me say hello to my producer, Tom Hush. How are you?
I'm doing well, Nick. How are you?
I had an interesting evening.
Yeah, yeah. I heard about it on the news.
Vic is in the newsroom. He'll be there all morning. But it's a pretty busy news night, especially locally. I'm assuming you guys have seen the top story that headlined the 10 o'clock news on locally, and that is this top story that Vic has been reporting on for most of the late evening. There was a car chase and a shootout in the city. A young 15-year-old was caught in the crossfire. There was a bank robbery that took place in Des Plaines. The Des Plaines cops and the state cops nabbed a guy in Des Plaines, and the other guy carjacked, stole a car, and then drove into the city being chased. And he exited the Kennedy at Irving Park. There was a chase, a shootout, and all that stuff. and that's 2 blocks away from my front door. It is literally 2 blocks away from my front door. So I was trying to get kind of a nap in at around 6:30-ish and 7. And then I just hear all kinds of crazy stuff outside. And then nothing but sirens and helicopters. And I was like, what is going on? Like, I mean, it was nonstop for 20 minutes. Nothing but cop cars and ambulances and just passing my apartment.
Were you able to hear the gunfire?
I was not. I heard a commotion. I heard something. I didn't think it was gunfire, but right near 7 o'clock, there was 20 minutes worth of just sirens passing my apartment, and then helicopters, and I was like, "What is going on?" So I looked out, and I saw, you know, they blocked off the road on the other side, and so then I started to see reports of what was happening, because then obviously, you know, a lot of the helicopters that were there were not just police helicopters, but they were obviously news. They were local news helicopters covering it from the air. And so suddenly, you know, my phone starts lighting up and I'm looking at the some of the feeds that are happening and the breaking news stuff. And it was just so insane, because it was 2 blocks away from where I live, like literally 2 blocks down the street. And it was chaos for the next 3 hours. I just, you know, heard nothing but tons of noise outside and cop cars and all kinds of stuff and everything. You know, they blocked off all the roads. And so it was weird. That was really, really weird. And it's now that like the top news story, you know, and they still blocked. They still, as Vic reported in the news for traffic, both ways on Irving Park is blocked between that area. So, but yeah, that was weird. I was sort of laying in my bed. I was listening to the Hawks, and as this stuff is unfolding, and I keep checking, you know, obviously I keep checking my news feed to see if there's any updates. And I'm like, I can't believe this is happening. I could walk outside and see everything that's happening right now. And so I stayed updated on the phone and everything, and to see what was happening with the breaking news. But that was really weird.
I mean, it's intense. I mean, you see the photos, you see that video footage.
Yeah.
It was full on.
Yeah. And that I've been to that music store where the shootout took place. You know, it's just right. It's right down the street. So that was really strange to see, you know, to watch footage of my neighborhood on my phone, breaking news, top story, shootout. It was just weird to see, you know, the area that is right outside my window. It was just a strange
evening.
Yeah, it was a strange evening. It was a very strange evening. So, anyway, that was my evening.
Very relaxing.
Yeah. Wow. So anyway, it's still, you know, everybody's worried about the condition of the police officer that was shot and the kid that was caught in the crossfire. And obviously there are more updates to be had and more details, and they're still investigating. You know, Irving is still closed between those streets, and so we will keep you posted. Vic is in the newsroom on the top local story, which happened in my neighborhood. So, wow. Anyway, all right. Let's get away from that story and talk about some space. Want to talk about the outer space world?
The final frontier.
Yes. So our good buddy Rod Pyle, who is a terrific writer, a great guy, and a fun guest, he joins us usually once a month to talk about space, outer space issues, outer space stories, and things like that. If you're a space enthusiast and you have a question or a comment and you want to ask Rod a question, he's going to be with us live. He's written several books, and he is a space expert. So we'll talk space, all things outer space, with Rod right after we break here on 720 WGN. Phone number 312-981-7200 for talk and text, and any questions you have about space for Rod, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. The great Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. We are going to be talking about, by the way, I said that Mickey Mouse was 51. Mickey Mouse is 91. I made a mistake. We're going to talk about the times that Mickey Mouse got banned. But he's 91. He turned 91, not 51. 91. Also coming up, we're going to get Barry, talk about how we exclusively talk and things that make us unique. The Chicagopedia Volume 1 is out, and we're going to talk about it. It's our town's lexicon, terms that defined Chicago. So we'll talk about that as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also, if you have any questions about outer space or comments about that, we have a space expert who joins us. He's a good friend of the show, and he's a great guest. His name is Rod Pyle. He's written a ton of books. He's a journalist. He's editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine for the National Space Society. And let's get Rod on the show. Rod, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Nick. How are you?
All right.
Been too long.
Yeah, how you been?
Good. I've been kind of busy,
yeah.
Kind of sick, kind of not sick again. You know, the smog in China, you wear one of those little white surgical masks they wear during the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
They get smog in the winter. And in about an hour, you get a little black ring around your mouth, you know?
Oh, man.
There was a guy, a couple of years ago, there was a performance artist that collected, I forget what it was, you know, so many square meters of air in Beijing and managed to compress it down into a little gray brick.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Well, that's expressive, yeah.
Wow.
But, glad to be home. Glad to be with you.
Well, it's always great to have you on. Tell everybody about yourself and all that cool stuff, as we always do by way of introduction for maybe people who...
Thank you. I'm an old guy who was born a year before NASA and grew up with the space race, which was a great time to be alive if you like cars with no seatbelts and spaceships. So I started kind of tuning into the whole thing near the end of the Gemini program. And then by the time the Apollo flights are going off the moon, I was an absolute addict and got to watch what the networks would let us see. Of course, back there were only three of them. So
yeah.
You were sort of, you know, victimized by when they decided to cut away to soap operas and such. But still, great to see it and wonderful to have those memories. And we just had a few days ago the anniversary of the launch and moonwalk from Apollo 12, which was cool.
Yeah.
Didn't get nearly as much attention as 11, either then or now. But that, I don't know if you know much about that mission, but that was the crew of Pete Conrad, Al Bean, and Dick Gordon. And of all the Apollo flights from 7 through 17, those guys were the funniest. They were like brothers. They were by far the tightest. They trained together. They hung out together. They really were like brothers, and they would all tell you that. And Pete Conrad was kind of the ringleader, and he was the wiseacre astronaut that NASA spent a lot of time worrying about because he was a sailor and he had a mouth like a sailor. So he had to control himself a bit. Anyway, so went on from that, went to UCLA in astronomy, had a difference of agreement with higher mathematics, and ended up going to film and television, and after a number of years of that, started writing books. So nowadays, people ask, I'm counting it as 17 books, because I know you've credited me with, I think the last was 10,400.
Right, something like that.
Which I appreciated.
Yeah.
But if I count the two NASA books for Jet Propulsion Laboratory, it's 17. So that's where I am now. And I edit, of course, Ad Astra magazine for the National Space Society, as you're always kind enough to point out. And just got back from speaking at a bunch of conferences and spreading the gospel.
Well, before we jump into some space stuff, you've been doing a lot of traveling. Now, you just mentioned China. What brought you there?
Well, I had been over there before to go to one of their public space centers to photograph their version of Soyuz spacecraft, which they licensed from the Soviet Union many years ago, called Shenzhou. And this trip was, my girlfriend was on business, and so I was just kind of tagging along. So I did a little bit of reconnoitering, but mainly I was just a tourist. So in Beijing, we went to see the Great Wall, which I'd never been to, and the Forbidden City, which I'd never been to. And the Great Wall is a cool afternoon because, you know, you walk a few hundred yards of it, and you're out of breath, and it's like, this is great.
Yeah.
Time to take the funicular back down the hill. But the Forbidden City, it's the size of Disneyland. I had no idea. I thought it was like, you know, a gate in a palace or something. It just goes on, and there's a palace for the emperor's seventh cousin's concubine and all this stuff. And it just went on and on and on. And so my girlfriend who grew up there is explaining to me, you know, now this is where the Empress Lo Wei slept, and she was, you know, related to this guy, but there was a palace intrigue going on. So it was just endless. So that was great. And then we went on to Shanghai from there and came back and immediately jetted off to lovely Fort Worth, Texas for the IEEE convention where I was the keynote.
And the IEEE, tell everybody about that convention.
It's an international group of electrical engineers, and you know it's an interesting kind of two-pronged thing, because it's so this is their big yearly gathering, and they had kind of been after me to do their luncheon keynote, and I was so busy when they were calling because I was in the middle of all that Apollo 11 anniversary stuff.
Yeah,
I kind of put it off, and I finally thought, I owe those guys a call, so I called them back, and they said, oh, thank goodness, you know, we really want you to come, which is of course. You know, you say that to a mid-list author like me, and it's like, oh, shucks, I'll be there in 10 minutes. So I jetted off there. The good thing is these are engineers, and they love this stuff. So I can do geek speak for an hour, and everybody's
sure.
right there with you.
Yeah.
On the other hand, there's always one guy in the audience that catches a mistake, and I forget what it was, but it was something about voltage or amperage or circuit breakers or something. And he said, you know, afterwards, he said, loved your talk. It's just this one thing, and I thought, here it comes, you know. And he was right, of course. But when I worked for the History Channel, we used to get, you know, write-ins from people that I used to call the rivet counters, because, you know, we'd show a B-17E flying in stock footage and then have a layover graphic, because it's the History Channel, so you have those pop-up graphics
sure.
of a B-17G, and they'd say, you know, you can tell because if you count the rivets in the tail, there's three more of the G, and I'm like, really? Really? You need a girlfriend, my
yeah,
sir.
Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, so it's been fun, and now I'm going to take December off and catch up.
Yeah. All right. Well, how much time did you spend in China? How long were you there?
About 10 days.
Wow.
The really cool thing is, for some reason, at this time of year, the hotels are getting cheap, so we got to stay at the Peninsula in Beijing for like $170 a night, and the Four Seasons in Shanghai for a little less, and boy, you try doing that here, and it's like $700 a night. So that
yeah.
part was spectacular.
Yeah. Wow.
So if you ever get a chance, definitely go this time of year and take an oxygen tank with you.
Yeah, bring an oxygen tank. How was the food?
Oh, it's sensational. Because the thing about those cities is they're so densely packed. The population is so big, and the city confines sufficiently tight that you go downstairs and you go out on the street and you walk 10 feet and there's a restaurant and there's another one across the street. And there's a nice kind of high fashion restaurant to your right and a little noodle stand on your left. So you're constantly surrounded by all this great food. Now, if you don't like Asian food, you're back to the hotel and it's, you know, dinner for $25. But if you like Asian food, you can have these incredible spreads for $4, $6. So it's interesting. It's getting increasingly expensive over there, especially to live. But as a tourist, it's just a steal, and it's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, but I do suggest going with somebody who speaks some Chinese, because without that, I would have been like completely
yeah,
lost.
That's true. Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah. Sounds like you had a great time.
It was marvelous.
And how was
how
this,
you been?
I've been okay. I've been all right. I had a very weird incident in my neighborhood this last night, Rod.
Uh-oh.
There was an actual two blocks away from my apartment, right on the main street, there was a shootout between cops and a bank robber.
Oh.
Like,
oh.
Literally two blocks from my front door. It was a madhouse last evening. There was another
wow.
sirens, helicopters everywhere, road, the street blocked off. And this was like, you know, like walking distance from my front door.
You know, we talk about these things in the U.S. and we go, oh, wow, that's wild. But only by a slight extension from our daily experience, because we've all heard, you know, if we lived in a major city, we've all heard the gunshots, we've
yep.
all heard the pop, 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 pop.
Yep.
Figured, ooh, that sounded like a full magazine, so that wasn't firecrackers. You go to so many other parts of the world, they're like, wait, you've heard a gun go off?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy.
Like 10 feet away, what
yeah,
do you mean?
It's crazy.
Well, yeah.
It was an interesting evening in my neighborhood.
Did you get on the floor like you're supposed to?
I didn't know what was happening at first. I was trying to, you know, because I have a weird sleep schedule, obviously, Rod, because I'm on the radio every night till 5 in the morning. I try to get a nap in the evening, and I heard some noise outside. I didn't really hear the gunshots or anything, but I heard like a commotion outside, and then suddenly nonstop sirens for 20 minutes straight and helicopters.
Jesus.
And like right outside my window, just nothing but emergency vehicles flying down the street. And it was weird. It was just a very intense and weird. And it's the top story here in Chicago. It's you know, it was the top story here in Chicago. A 15-year-old kid was shot twice coming out of a music store right on a main street in the middle of the city. A couple of guys robbed a bank in a suburb. The suburban cops nabbed one of the guys. The other guy carjacked somebody, took the car, stole it, got on the expressway, got off right by my apartment, and then that's where the shootout took place.
Were there fatalities?
No. Yes. One of the bank robbers was killed.
But not the kid.
He's in the hospital right now. He's got two wounds, and a Chicago police officer was shot as well, and he's being treated right now. It was crazy.
And you were at ground zero.
I was right there, man. The weird thing, Rod, was that as I was saying before, because I didn't know what was going on. I just heard all the emergency vehicles and all the chaos and everything, and the helicopters and stuff. So I grabbed my phone, I start looking at breaking news stuff, and I see my neighborhood from helicopter point of view with cop cars everywhere. It was crazy and surreal.
That must have been surreal. See, this is what you get for living in the high rent district.
All right, Rod, hang on, okay, man?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll get to some space stories as well. We had to talk travel with Rod. But, if you guys have any questions or comments about space, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m., as we are every weekday morning. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and we are talking about space right now. We're going to play a little round of Know Your Onion. We're going to talk Chicagoese, things that are exclusive to this city, the way we talk, things about the city that only a real Chicagoan would know. We're going to talk about Mickey Mouse after his 91st birthday. And some ways that movies have saved lives. But right now we're talking space, and we would love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Talk or text any questions or thoughts on outer space. Rod Pyle is our guest, author, journalist, and editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. And he joins us usually about once a month. Rod, welcome back.
Thanks. Can I mention a couple of media things real quick?
Of course you can, yes.
So I'm trying to decide, maybe you can help me, For All Mankind, the new TV show on Apple TV?
Yes.
Is it going to be worth $5 a month to see this? Because
not...
there's nothing else on Apple TV I want to see.
Let's see if anybody's got it. If people's got Apple TV and they've watched For All Mankind, I do not have
That'd
it. Maybe somebody can give their opinion on it because there's nothing else on Apple TV that Rod wants to watch.
Right, there's that morning show, and there's that, and the reviews for it have been pretty solid, and the people on some of the Facebook groups, there's a big one called Space Hipsters, I think I've talked about. It's like 7,000 space fanatics, and they seem to like it, although of course they caught the mistakes because there's Rivet Cutters
of course.
But, so that's kind of on my agenda. And then I saw just today they're announcing that Ad Astra, the miserable motion picture, will be released in China in December. It's going to be interesting, and I'm really, sort of splitting hairs here, but, it was such a kind of a deep psychosis melodrama movie about, crossing the universe to deal with your daddy issues. It's going to be interesting to see how the Chinese relate to it, because I think they have a very different take. On the one hand, family relationships are everything. On the other hand, pop psychology isn't. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that market relates to it.
It will be, yeah. I mean, I still haven't caught up. I'm going to catch up with it because I want to see it before the end of the year, because at the end of the year, I have to put my lists together for the best and worst movies of the year and all that. And not only that, I have to put together a list for the decade, because it's the end of the decade. So that's
poor you, man.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. But if anybody has the Apple Plus and they've watched For All Mankind, help Rod out here and let them know what you thought. Give us your opinion. 312-981-7200. Talk or text your thoughts on that. 312-981-7200.
And I think last time I mentioned the Right Stuff documentary I'm working on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Mention that again.
Yeah.
For anybody who was around during that era, correct?
Yeah. So it's National Geographic. It's the same production unit that made the Nat Geo Apollo 11 film. So I'm helping them with their Right Stuff documentary. So it's everything from the X1 up, you know, 1946 up through the end of Mercury in 1962-63 era. So if anybody was alive then, I mean, we're looking for stuff from the era, not interviews and so forth now, but what? Stills and movies and audio recordings and stuff that are hard to find. So if anybody's got stuff, maybe you can route them to me.
Yeah.
We're still looking. Okay,
go.
That's it.
All right.
Your turn, mister.
Okay. All right. And again, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Now, Tom actually doesn't have the Apple Plus, but he just got the Disney Plus. One of the main draws, though, is for Star Wars fans, Rod, because there's the Mandalorian is you can only see it on Disney Plus. And how many episodes are up there now? Two?
Yeah, there's two now.
Now, how's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Yeah,
people are going crazy for there's Baby Yoda.
Yeah,
it's not so actually Yoda, but it's the same species.
Yeah, but it's, yeah.
Really? Is that kind of a Boba Fett tie in here? I haven't really been paying attention.
I don't know. Boba Fett's dead by this point. It takes place 5 years after Return of the Jedi.
Okay. So Boba Fett's gone, but the internet is like it's this Baby Yoda thing is blowing up the internet. Like, it is truly. I mean, people are going nuts over this Baby Yoda, even though he's not Yoda.
Nuts you will be.
Yeah, my girlfriend asked me. She's like, I want for Christmas a little plush Baby Yoda. Not Yoda, like the old man Yoda. I want the baby Yoda.
Yo, it's going to be huge.
I hope make one.
What are those little creatures, those adorable little creatures that are in the J.J. Abrams things called?
Oh, like Porgs or something?
Yeah, is it Porg?
Porgs?
Yeah, Porgs. Like kind of big-eyed penguin type thing.
Those things are adorable. Those things are adorable. So
I can't believe you just said that. This is self-respecting, dude. You know, I remember when the Ewoks one came out.
Yeah.
And it was so clear to everybody, at least that I knew, that this was a branding exercise. They could sell plush toys or something.
Right.
I just wanted to get a scythe and go in there and massacre all those little things. And maybe that's just, you know, my particular dysfunction. But I really... I hated that one, that installment.
Yeah.
I just thought everything about it was wrong.
Well, they were in Jedi. That's Return of the Jedi, which I don't like either.
Yeah.
And then they also had like their own. Didn't they have their own movie on made for TV?
Yeah, they had like a either made for TV movie or like a series just called Ewoks.
Oh man,
how unfortunate.
Yeah,
but no, it gave us Warwick Davis. So
yeah, but got work for Warwick Davis. So that's one thing. I can say that. Okay, we actually have go ahead.
Star Trek the Animated Series. Does anybody remember that?
No.
Oh yeah.
You remember the anime?
I've watched it.
It was so it's you know now it's retro TV, but it was a few years after the original went off. Same actors' voices, but it was that kind of hideous Hanna-Barbera limited animation.
Oh,
you know?
God.
It was barely watched. Stories weren't terrible necessarily. It was just almost impossible to watch.
They got the original cast, Shatner and Nimoy and all those guys?
For the most part, yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Because we were so desperate, you know, it's like, well, I guess I'll, you know, squeeze myself and watch this until my eyes start to bleed. But it was better than nothing, but just barely.
Yeah.
You know, those are dark years.
They were. And you know what? I mean, I remember when the first Star Trek movie came out in 1979, and it wasn't very good at all. And I remember,
there we go again.
No, you don't like the 1970. You like the original Star Trek movie, the 1979.
Well, no, you know what? I liked what it was trying to do. It didn't do it well. Robert Wise was rather elderly gentleman at that point, and it was the wrong movie for him, even though he's a fine director. But I have to say. And I think the screenplay, the original script was by Alan Dean Foster, right?
I think so, yeah.
Big sci-fi writer. So I thought the story was cool, and I thought what they were trying to do was cool. It was just incredibly boring to get there.
Yeah.
If I had to see one more shot of Mr. Sue staring at the view screen, talking his head left and right, I would have shot myself. But there were parts of it, I have to say, that the V'ger was again slow, but I thought the idea behind that, the construct outside and then going through it, if it had been about a third the time, was really cool. It just went on way too long.
Yeah. Well, I didn't hate it. I got to tell you, I did not hate it. But I remember how disappointed fans were. I remember there was a massive line outside of one of the theaters that I went to, and people were coming out of an earlier showing, and some of the people in line were asking how it was, and people were just kind of shaking their heads, going, "It's not very good." Yeah, but then, but then you know, a few years later, Wrath of Khan came out, and that's still one of the greatest, not just a great Star Trek movie, but a great science fiction movie. And
well, it's like you got these two huge hams strutting around the screen, taunting each other, never in the same room, you know, which is great.
Yep.
But it was just thrilling. And then, as I've related before, but just very quickly, 17 years later, when I was working on Deep Space, we got Enterprise, the 1701A, in the stage for a calendar shooter book cover. I think it was a book cover. You know, it's an 8-foot model. That was life changing. It was so beautiful, and it's so awful that the studio sold it. It should be in a museum next to the 1701 original. But
I agree with you.
All right. Was just gorgeous.
Rod, hang on, okay?
You bet.
All right, Rod Pyle is with us. He's a space expert, and he talks about other stuff too. Even because he worked in Hollywood business for a while on sci-fi stuff and special effects and all that cool stuff. So if you want to jump in, 312-981-7200. And once again, if you guys have the Apple Plus and you saw For All Mankind, Rod is wondering if it's worth it. 312-981-7200. Talk or text. We'll have more after this.
I'm an alligator. I'm a mama papa coming for you.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio till 5 o'clock. Coming up is Steve Grzanich with the opening bell, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Rod Pyle is our guest. He's an author, a journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra, space expert and speaker, and we're talking space. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Rod, welcome back.
Hey, and I just got a nice email from one of your listeners, Paul, telling me about the Tommy Bartlett Exploratory.
Oh, in the Dells? In the Wisconsin Dells?
Yeah. I didn't realize they had a Mercury capsule. I don't know if it's a test unit or a float. It's not a flown unit, I don't think. And one of the three unflown units from the Mir space station. That's
That's pretty cool. I never knew that.
How about that?
Yeah. All right, Tommy Bartlett. Very cool. Right. Legendary place up in Wisconsin, Rod. Legendary.
Okay. So, good. Good to know.
Yeah. All right. We've got some people on the line who have a couple of questions, and we'll get to some of the space news as well. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. And again, I put out an APB for anybody who's got Apple Plus. If you saw For All Mankind, Rod is wondering if it's any good. 312-981-7200. Here's Lulu on WGN. Go ahead, Lulu.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
Good.
Rod, you are my favorite guest. And
thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. My question is about Elon Musk. The more I read about him, the more I get this feeling that he's just a flim-flam man. And he's got his hands in too many projects. He's behind with NASA delivering what I can't tell you what it is, but I know that NASA's given him billions of dollars, and Boeing is behind their dateline too. But what is your feeling about him?
Well, let me just address that last point first. So NASA gave Boeing almost twice as much, and by a reasonable metric, they're even further behind with SpaceX. So that's a point. You know, I hear what you're saying, and Musk is a kind of a bizarre figure. He's not always at his best when he's on the media, you know, as witnessed by when he's smoking that joint on TV and so forth.
Right.
But, you know, you go to the SpaceX factory and you see what he's accomplished in 20 years. It's the only place in the world where real flying rockets that are one of the most reliable rockets out there and have captured about half the launch market on the planet are being built in mass production. And now he's got the Starship. It looks impossible. It's this big stainless steel thing that looks like it's out of an old Bugs Bunny cartoon. We haven't seen if it's going to fly yet. But I got to say, everything that I've seen that he touches, and I look mostly at the space stuff, you know, I mean, my girlfriend's buying a Tesla next week, so we're going to check that out. But you know, he's revolutionized these industries. So I kind of have the opposite feeling. Everything I've seen him get into, you know, here's a guy who was very rich before he decided to lose all his money trying to make rockets, which he, by 2008, he was broke. He had burned through all his PayPal money for the company before that and had to get bailed out by a billionaire acquaintance of his. But he doesn't just go into these industries and dabble. He goes in and literally reinvents them. And until he decided, I'm going to make a reusable rocket, nobody had even come close. So I understand what you're saying, but I think he really does deliver the goods. And my suspicion is that he may not be of this earth. You know, there's a slim chance that we got him from somewhere else, because he's awfully good at this stuff.
Yeah.
So that's my take.
Okay. All right.
Oh, very good. Thank you so much.
All right, Lulu. Take care.
Oh, you bet.
All right. There you go.
Thanks, Lulu.
He's an interesting guy, Elon Musk.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, he's so... It was interesting because Peter Thiel came out not too long ago talking to a group of young people, and he said, you know, don't use this guy as your role model, because he's not your average genius. You know, he's a mega genius, and if you just aspire to be good at one piece of one of the things he's doing, that's enough.
Yeah,
you know. True. But I think he's the kind of Nikola Tesla figure that comes along once in a century, and we won't see the likes of this again for a long time. I'm being a little fanboy gushy here.
Yeah, sure.
The more I look at it, the more I read about him, the more I talk to people that work with him and for him. And, you know, I was like 20 feet away from him a couple of weeks ago at a press thing, but we didn't get to talk. But, you know, I think he's the real thing.
Yeah.
He's just, he's a complex guy.
Yeah, no question. All right, here's Doc on WGN. Go ahead, Doc.
Hey, Nick. I do love it when this guest is on. I just saw where Amazon is requesting to put 3,000 small satellites in space. And yeah. I read that they requested it of the FCC. And my question is, besides the FCC, who is the controlling bodies that regulate all this? And what are the liability issues of putting these items in space? Say your older beater satellite comes over and knocks out my new $150 million satellite. Who's liable? Who governs all that?
Those are really good questions. So the owner and launching entity of the satellite is responsible. Up till a few years ago, that was a country such as the U.S. or the Soviet Union, then Russia, and then later Japan and China and Europe. And now increasingly it's private entities that own and control these things, sometimes in conjunction with the Air Force or NASA, and sometimes on their own. So, yeah, if your satellite does a nasty while it's up there, it's your problem. All these people carry insurance at great expense, so the insurance companies fight it out just like when two cars collide. In terms of oversight, it's the FCC manages the spectrum. The FAA manages getting it up there and keeping it up there and worrying about if it comes down where it's going to go. And then the Air Force tracks everything, but it's a little unclear at this point who exactly controls the orbits. You know, Musk. So Amazon's launching their satellites. I think it's actually going to be more than 3,000 in response to what Musk is doing with Starlink, which is his constellation. He's got 120 up there as of last week. Now, ultimately, there's going to be 30,000 of them, and these are low-altitude, low-Earth-orbit satellites that are going to be going overhead to hand off broadband, and he's going to make more billions on that. So Amazon and I think two other companies are trying to do the same thing. So we're going to have probably quadruple the number of satellites that are up there now in these very low orbits. There's already a ton of junk up there from exploded rocket stages and anti-satellite tests and all that. So the Air Force tracks all this stuff that they can from about the size of a softball up. It's a big problem. The smart thing that they've done with Musk and the other people who are flying these new small satellites is, A, if you can put it up there, you got to be able to bring it down. So they've got little rocket engines on them. And B, they're autonomously aware of each other. So if one of their other satellites is about to cross your in front of you on a collision course, or if it spots something out there or has relayed something that's going to be big enough to cause damage, it can thrust itself out of the way. But you're right, it's really complicated, and it's a whole new area of oversight and control that's going to have to get ramped up. As you've seen, know, these developments happen so fast, regulation and government is usually at least 5-6 years behind in terms of figuring out what to do.
Okay, Rod, hang on one second. I know you want to finish your thought, but we have to break for the news. Doc, thanks for the call. Keep your radio on.
Thanks, Doc.
Okay. There you go. All right, so we're going to take a break for the news, and then we'll have more with Rod Pyle. 312-981-7200 is the phone number.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe.
Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are here live in the Skyline Studio on a Wednesday morning. Wildcard Wednesday, that'll be coming up a little bit later on. Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday. So get your requests in, any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. We'll play a role, another edition of Know Your Onion. That's where Tom will read you some news headlines, and you have to figure out whether they're real or they're from the satirical newspaper, The Onion, because real news is really weird these days. So sometimes it's hard to tell if it's a real headline or an onion headline. And if you can do that, you'll win some prizes. We'll take the first two phone callers as our contestants this morning. We have an unfortunate Blackhawks Express to play back too. That's all coming up on the show. 312-981-7200. Right now, Rod Pyle is with us. Author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, space expert and speaker. Always have a great time when Rod is here. And Rod, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
All right. Let's get back to it. We got taxi driver Bob. Hey, Bob, what's your question?
My question is, I wanted to find out if Rod had seen the series, the first season of the Netflix production, Mars.
So is that the that's the National Geographic
show,
Yeah,
that's
right?
The National Geographic show. There are two seasons, and it's now streaming on Netflix.
Yeah, so it's half documentary and half fiction. And yes,
right, and they were talking about going back and forth between like the story plot, and then you know like the story, and then going to the documentary, and they had a lot of stuff about Elon Musk and you know and SpaceX and all that stuff.
So it was the first show. I mean, there haven't been very many shows done with that formula, but it was the first time I saw one where I actually was excited to get back to the documentary part. Because the narrative part was really kind of pissing me off. So I saw it. I thought the speakers, the interviewees were pretty good. The show itself, you know, I think we talked about this with you before, Nick. It was like, I felt like I was watching Space 1999 again with an entire cast that would never smile because they had these permanent space scowls stapled on their faces about, oh, space is dangerous and dark and ugly and horrible. And, you know, if you talk to astronauts, if you listen to the guys while they're on the moon of Apollo, if you look at the guys and ladies on the space station, they're having a blast up there. And they're not faking it. They really enjoy it. So the idea behind the whole Mars show and all these contrived emergencies, you know, the Apple IIe circuit board that was 30 feet behind the commander's seat when they were in the first episode, breaking to go into Martian orbit, and he has to get out and climb to the back of the ship, and then turned into a red jelly sandwich when they, you know, slam into the atmosphere, and all these contrivances. I thought, I get that it's a drama, but come on, you know, give me a break. Let's have some levity here. And we've seen other productions do that, including Star Trek, the new movies. You know, there's a lot of humor in there. There always has been. And Star Wars. So I just felt it was kind of ponderous. What did you guys think?
Well, I haven't seen it. Bob, did you like it, Bob?
I did like it. And I just was kind of wanting to find out if the story plot with them having to have their colony underground and being able to find a vein of water, and then also to be able to spend, you know, that amount of time on there, as well as the fact that, you know, there are things to mine up there, and that they would have companies to go up there and drill to get you know, whatever kind of precious metals or whatever they would be drilling for. Is that any of that realistic, or is that like something that is factual behind all that stuff?
See, that's the stuff I think. I'm glad you brought that up because I think they nailed that stuff. So, yeah, if you're going to be on the moon or Mars, which are the two nearest terrestrial-like bodies we think we can get to in the next 50 years, you need to be either under a lot of shielding or underground. So shielding meaning if you're going to have a building on the surface, you got to have like 10 feet of dirt and rock over it to protect you from all the radiation coming in, because there's no magnetosphere in either of those bodies to protect like we have on Earth that keeps the radiation from cooking us here. So, and that's both from the sun and from outside the solar system, that radiation. So on Mars and the moon, we think the best way is to get down inside a lava tube or some kind of opening beneath the surface where all that natural rock of the cave above you will protect you. Unfortunately, that means you're traveling to Mars, a spaceship with a couple little windows. You get to Mars, and what's the first thing you do? You have to get in your spacesuit and go underground and live down there like you're in a submarine.
Nah.
So the amount of time you could actually spend on the surface is kind of limited. And as far as the water coming out of the sides of the rock, yeah, there's areas where we're pretty sure we've already seen that. And drilling and mining for water is certainly going to be a thing. As far as precious metals, nobody knows yet because we don't have any Mars samples to look at. So it's all guesswork.
All right, Bob, thanks for the call. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk or text. So I wanted to mention this to you before we jump into some more space news here. Did you see the movie Lucy in the Sky?
No, because I read the description of it. I was just talking to Tom before we came back on. He reminded me which one it was. I thought, yeah, I didn't like that story. This is about the female astronaut that puts duct tape and a hammer and a bunch of plastic sheeting in her trunk, puts on some diapers and tries to drive across country to apparently, we think, do in her. Or a strange lover, astronaut guy. And so I thought, I don't want to spend 2 hours with this lady. And apparently a lot of people thought so, because on the $27 million budget, it made $320,000.
First of all, it's not good.
184. So you saw it?
Yeah, I did. I'm a really big Natalie Portman fan, and that's why I went to see it.
Yeah.
But it's not so much about space as it is a weird sort of psychological domestic drama. It's not very good. And it's loosely based on that true story. There are elements from the movie that are in it, but it's not a full-on, you know, like that story done, you know, accurately. It was just inspired by it. But the guy behind it, Noah Hawley, who's also the guy, the creator of Fargo, he's directing the next Star Trek movie, which I find kind of interesting.
Yeah. I saw that, and then I caught an article today, but apparently it wasn't current. I didn't check the date. That said, news leak, the Star Trek IV movie, and of course this is the new Star Trek IV, because we had an old Star Trek IV, so the new Star Trek IV movie has been indefinitely canceled or postponed, but everything I see from today, it says they're back on, and that guy's directing it, and what an interesting choice. So he did Fargo and Legion on FX.
Right.
So he's been successful in TV. You know, his feature movie debut.
Not good.
I mean, 320, you know, you paid a significant percentage of the $320,000 it made to buy a ticket and get popcorn.
Yeah.
So seems risky, you know? I thought Tarantino sounded risky, but that sounds like a slam dunk compared to this.
Yeah, I agree. It'll be interesting to see what happens. But I got to say, I adore Fargo. I just really love that show. And
so they were just filming on my street the other day.
Yeah, the latest season is being filmed here in Chicago. It's Chris Rock is in it. I think it's a period. It's a period thing, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. So that's going to be interesting to see. Rod, hang on, okay?
Okay, sure.
All right, there you go. Rod Pyle is with us. We're going to talk more space news and entertainment news and all that kind of stuff. We have a lot of fun when Rod's here. It's always a blast. Our phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also, if anybody saw For All Mankind on Apple Plus, I think we've got a text that came in. Talking about that and more. 312-981-7200 is the number, and we'll break right now and be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's one of my favorite songs of all time. And we are back. We're live in the Skyline Studio here till 5 o'clock. It's Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday. We'll play those a little bit later on. That's any song, any artist, anything, 312-981-7200. Rod Pyle is with us, our space expert, author of many books. And let's get back to the conversation. Welcome back, Rod.
Thanks, sir.
All right. So if you guys have any questions or comments that are space involved, it's 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We got a text that just came in. Rod, from the 815.
Anybody watching For All Mankind?
Yeah, here we go. From 815, okay. 815 area code, For All Mankind was incredible and extremely entertaining.
Oh, good. Oh, bad. Now I got to buy an Apple TV box.
And it's, and he also goes on to say, also in space news, and this is gonna segue right into the first story that you sent over to us, Starlink will change the world like Tesla has. SpaceX is the future, and long live Elon Musk, is what they say.
Yeah. So, right. So 30,000 satellites within the next 5 years at great expense, estimating about $10 billion to do all this. And the story I sent you was actually partly about that, but also partly about the astronomers are crying foul because by the time he's done, I mean, you can only see about 4,000 stars in a given hemisphere at night as it is. So there's going to be many times that potentially bright objects zipping overhead. Musk claimed they'd only be visible at twilight briefly, but astronomers are saying, look, we're seeing them now. There's only 120 up there, and they're causing, you know, if they go through something you're photographing, they cause a little streak. And astronomers, of course, if they're using optical telescopes, using often looking at very, very faint objects, so something the brightness of a Starlink satellite whizzing through at magnitude 3 or 4 is really going to ruin their night. And I guess there's also concern about radio interference. So he's trying to dial the frequencies in a little bit and paint them darker colors, you know, absorbing colors, so they won't be such an issue. But I think at this point, especially with the other companies ramping up to do this too, this is just unstoppable.
Yeah. And so the astronomers are going to just have to deal with it?
Well, I guess, you know, there will be ever-changing plots available, so you could try and look between some of these orbital intersections, but they're going to be all over the place. You know, they're basically from way up high latitudes to way low latitudes and crisscrossing all over, because that's the whole idea, that they're covering the whole planet, and your web search could be handed off 3 times while you're making it as these things pass overhead, because they're in very fast orbits because they're low. So, you know, it's going to be tricky. And even if it's not a bright object, there will be, at the very least, a dark object going through your field of view. So if you're looking at some galaxy, you know, hundreds and hundreds of light years away, and it's already extremely faint, it's going to be a real problem. So, I there's no answer for these guys. I think they're just going to have to suck it up and deal with it.
Wow.
Which, of course, on the other hand, gives us a very good reason to do what we should have done a long time ago, which is go build an observatory on the far side of the moon where there's no radio interference, there's no air. There you've got a perfect view. So now we got some motivation. How's that?
Okay. Well, that's a good way. That's a nice way of twisting it. There you go.
Yeah. I always count on me to twist things.
That's right. Half, you know, half glass, half full. That's what we're looking at.
Yes.
All right.
Right.
Here is Paul on WGN. Hi, Paul.
Hi. Was it about a month ago where a small satellite crashed in someone's yard or something?
Huh.
It was on the news.
I didn't track that story.
It was on the news, and it looked like it was a homemade satellite. It looked like it had plastic parts and stuff.
Oh, I'm not familiar with the story.
I see something from October 27th says that the Samsung, a piece of a Samsung satellite.
Yeah, it looked like it was made out of part plastic.
What?
Yeah, nobody's flying, junky toys up there yet, but there are CubeSats that use off-the-shelf components, and some actually, no kidding, use cell phones to power them. That has been experimented with.
What did you find, Tom? I think Tom found something. What do you?
Yeah, so that was reported by ABC News. A space satellite crashed in the front yard of a Michigan home. It was a Samsung pseudo space satellite that parachuted from the sky and fell to the ground.
Yeah, this was not a satellite. It's actually a stratospheric contraption, right? they're calling it a satellite, but yeah. I think it was, yeah, it was just something that was meant to loiter way up in the upper atmosphere. So it didn't actually re-enter.
Oh, okay. And it's what part of Michigan?
So this was in Gratiot County. So this was in Merrill, Michigan.
Okay.
Merrill, Michigan.
I'm not familiar with what part of the mitten that is, but...
The contraption had several Samsung plaques on it, and, yeah. and wording on the sides of the box said, space selfie.
Space selfie.
Space selfie!
And it's got big tip off, it's not a satellite, it's got four landing pads.
Okay.
So it looks kind of like the lunar module with a big tin sail on top, so yeah, that was kind of a giveaway.
Okay.
Looks like it was on a balloon. And he's right. Your caller's right. It's got like tin foil wrapped around the top and cardboard on the side.
Yeah, there
nice
you go,
try,
Paul.
Gang.
Nice.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Paul, take care.
Thanks, Paul.
That's pretty funny.
What a weird story.
What did it say on the side again?
Space selfie.
Space selfie.
It was part of Samsung Europe's space selfie balloon campaign with the idea that customers can get their faces in the Earth's stratosphere via a Galaxy S10 5G smartphone.
Oh, I had heard about that. I didn't know that there's something crashed, but I had heard about that promotion. But I didn't know the thing crashed, and it crashed in Michigan.
So I have to confess to doing something like this once years ago when I was working at I was running a commercial production division for this commercial studio in L.A. We had just finished a spot, and we were left over with these two enormous expensive tanks of helium. I'm looking at the guy, Gary Hutz, who later hired me to work on Trek, and I said, you know, other than having squeaky voices, we can't let this go to waste. And so we found this roll of garbage bags and made up this enormous balloon with a piece of cut foam core under it that rotated and had blinky lights on it and set it off going down Ventura Boulevard in Studio City. And Griffith Observatory, where I had worked about 5 years earlier, got a lot of calls that night.
Oh, they did.
Yeah, I was very happy to be able to track that. So it's one little bit of mischief in the 80s.
By the way, do you know, I don't remember how many years ago it was, but just recently, like last week or the week before, it was the anniversary of that Balloon Boy hoax.
Yeah.
Do you remember that one, Rod?
Are you talking about the guy that went up in the lawn chair?
No. They had there was a balloon that was floating around, and the father called up the cops and the authorities and claimed that his son, like his 6-year-old son, was a 5-year-old son was in the balloon, and then the kid was actually at home, like in the garage,
in like the attic,
right.
in the attic, yeah. right. And then the funny thing is, what I remember about the story. First of all, the story was truly bizarre. I mean, this is the way that you want to get publicity is to lie about your son being in a runaway balloon,
right?
But
right.
I remember what happened was when they were being interviewed, and the whole family was being interviewed about the incident, and the actual kid blew the whole thing. Like, he said, I was inside the kid on the air, like in a live interview.
And then he threw up on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but they had the anniversary of, how long ago was that? That wasn't last year, was it?
What?
No, it was a long time ago.
No, it was years ago.
Well, yeah, that was like 10 years ago.
Yeah, so it was like the 10th anniversary.
Yeah, because that happened when I was in high school.
Oh, okay. All right.
So. Now, do you remember the lawn chair Larry thing?
I do. Yes, lawn chair.
So that was at the same commercial house I was talking about about 4 years before I started working there. He was the shipping clerk, and he'd had this dream of flight. So he got a lawn chair and attached, I don't know, 40 balloons to it that were about the size of large beach balls.
Right.
And filled them up. And he had a pellet gun that he was going to use to shoot them out when it was time to come down. The funny part that never came out in the press, as far as I know, although they tried to make documentaries on it and stuff, was one of the grips there. I mean, a grip's job is to tie knots, right? That's what you do for a living. You tie knots and move lights, all that. So he tied the chair off to the bumper of his truck, and Larry gets in it, and he's filling them up, and he's got the pellet gun in his lap and all that, and the knot comes undone, and off goes the chair, and he dropped the pellet gun because he wasn't ready to go, so that's why he couldn't shoot the balloons out. And I actually have a tape somewhere in my garage, a cassette tape of the radio coming down from a TWA flight saying, center, we got it. Well, we got a guy in a lawn chair up here, like 10,000 feet. We don't know what to do. And it's unbelievable because the controller's going back and forth. So, say again, TWA 140 heavy. I said we have a guy in a lawn chair and he's waving his arms. So, yeah, he was lucky he didn't die.
That's true. All right, very funny. Man. All right, Rod, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right. It's always a blast when Rod is here. Rod Pyle is here. We have a link to his website on our Facebook page. That's another reason you should like our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/NickDShow. You got any questions or comments or observations here that are space related? We'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5. Steve Cochran has your morning drive at 6. And we got a round of Know Your Onion coming up after the 4:30 news, an unfortunate Blackhawks Express to play back, and we're going to talk about the Chicagopedia, the lexicon of our city, and what makes us so unique. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Rod Pyle is with us, we're talking space issues and other stuff, too. And, Rod, welcome back.
Thanks.
You sent me a story that titled Interstellar Revisited, and then I read it, and I was disappointed that it wasn't about the movie.
Of course you were, because we need another 3.5 hours of Love Conquers All. Okay, I'll stop. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
You think they're going to make a sequel to that?
No.
Is there a sequel to
that? It made a lot of money. It was a big hit, but
Yeah.
But it had a definitive ending. I don't think there is room for a sequel, but it did.
Yeah, pretty much him dissolving in another dimension kind of put the stopper in it.
Yeah. So
and if only Matthew McConaughey had stayed there. Okay, I'll stop. Sorry.
So tell us what this story is about.
So there's been since it's the 70s, but certainly picking up in the late 80s, early 90s, a number of plans for an interstellar probe. And I think part of that was sort of kicked off by Voyager, because both the Voyager spacecraft eventually left the solar system. Couple of Pioneer spacecraft went out by Jupiter and Saturn did before them, but they were defunct by then. But the Voyagers have kept working and have sent back information from beyond this bubble called the heliosphere, which is where the energy from the sun kind of stops and is blunted by incoming energy from the rest of the universe. So there's a sort of bubble around the solar system. So they're looking at ways to make probes that will go out there specifically with that purpose. They're not going to loiter around there were flybys, but they're not going to specifically target the outer planets. They're going out to leave the solar system, maybe not even in the plane of the planets, maybe in another direction, to try and see more about what's in the space between our star and other stars, and to look back at our solar system. And one of the side benefits of that is by going far enough and looking back at our solar system, seeing what you see, you might get some leads on how to look at exoplanets that are further away from us. The problem is to do this. So there's a new project afoot. It's going to be talked about in 2023 in depth. They're already putting money into it, but they'll make the decision in 2023. They have this thing called the Decadal Survey where NASA and government decides what they're going to do. The thing is, it would take a really big rocket, the SLS, with a huge upper stage, basically to carry this thing out past the sun. It whoops around the sun, does a big planetary flyby to Jupiter to pick up speed, comes around the sun again, like skimming the surface of the sun practically, to sling, because you need that big gravity assist to sling it out of the solar system at like 120,000 miles per hour. So it's a really cool thing if they could do it. And it would ultimately go out like 90, 95 billion miles from the sun and be looking back all the way. But they want to use the big rocket and the extra speed boost to go and pass the major planets of the sun so that they could do it in 10 to 15 years instead of the 35 it took Voyager to leave the solar system.
Mm. Okay. Oh, well, that's interesting. No. Oh.
Well, sorry I disappointed you, but it's still cool.
No, it's very cool.
219
area code sends in a text that says, what does your guest know about Blue Origin and travel and life on the moon?
So Blue Origin is Jeff Bezos' company, space company, which he's building with Amazon money. It actually started for SpaceX. It started in 2000. SpaceX was in 2002. And he's been slowly but very quietly building his new Shepard rocket, which, as we've talked about before, it's a suborbital tourist ride. But he's also building a new Glenn rocket, which is much larger. It's about the same class as the Falcon Heavy. And he's building some of the biggest rocket engines built in the last 25 years, with like 500,000 pound thrust, so about a third of one of the Apollo Saturn V first stage engines. But the weird thing is he's building them for his rockets, and he's also selling them to another company, United Launch Alliance, which is a primary competitor in this sort of co-opetition. And for about 3 years ago, he started working on a moon lander because he, like Musk, he felt like people were dragging their feet and NASA wasn't getting out of business fast enough for his taste. And he puts $1 billion of his own year in this, of his own money each year, by the way. So he's really putting his money where his mouth is. So NASA said, hey, we're going back to the moon in 2024. This was like, what, 6 months ago. And a couple weeks later, Bezos says, hey, I'm building the lander. You want it? So they're working together on that. And he's also talked in the last few months about, you know, these guys are constantly changing direction, not because they can't make up their minds, but they're adjusting to NASA's plans, to what Trump says about space, to the government, and to private factors in the private space trade, and to each other, frankly. They're reacting and adjusting. So Bezos is now, just recently, I think a couple weeks ago, came up with a thing called the National Plan for Space, I think it's called, where he got together with, I think it's Northrop Grumman and Draper Labs, who are the people at MIT that built the Apollo spacecraft computer. And the three of them are basically offering their services to NASA, saying, we'll get you to the moon. Stop worrying about it. We'll take care of everything. So he's an ambitious guy.
Yeah, wow. Sounds like it. Jeez.
It's cool. Yeah. I mean, it's really neat that he's doing it. And again, this is his money. You know, he can do what the hell he wants.
Yeah, it's true. True. Well, thanks for the text. If you guys want to jump in, 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. We got another call. Here's Nick on WGN. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, Rob, I got a question for you. How factual is it, like Gordon Cooper back in the 60s and 70s when he was doing his Mercury flights, that he actually mapped shipwrecks from space? Did they have the technology to do that on those flights?
So, yeah, this is the treasure story, right?
Right.
Gordon Cooper's treasure, yeah. As far as I know, that's been pretty successfully debunked, although I hear both sides of the tale every now and then. Somebody new will come and say, hey, we just found this new thing. The best sort of feedback I've gotten on that was from some NASA folks who didn't have a pony in that race of any kind, and they said, you know, you can't see that from orbit without a telescope, and he didn't have one. He was in a Mercury capsule, which is barely big enough for him and his squeeze tube of beef toothpaste for lunch, right? So, you know, he would be able to see countries and mountain ranges and things like that, but when you get down to the scale of those kinds of things, he'd need a very powerful telescope, and they just didn't have it.
No. Yeah, I didn't know if they had the technology back then to, you know, for all their, you know, their analysis and, you know, photographs from space, if they could see something like that. Yeah. That's what I wondered.
Not for Mercury. In fact, when John Glenn flew, which was, what, a couple of months before that, he had to go down to the corner store near the Cape Canaveral and find a Minolta camera to take on his flight because NASA didn't even have a camera on Mercury.
Oh, God.
He had a little 35-millimeter Minolta Hi-Matic with a 15-millimeter lens that was just taking these wide shots, you know, out this little tiny window. So that was kind of, you know, they were just getting started, so the tech was really primitive, and Mercury was just about getting them up there, getting them back alive to make sure we could do it.
All right, Nick, thanks for the call, buddy.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, take care. How does a rumor like that get started, Rod?
Well, there was a guy, I don't remember the exact story, but there was this guy that claimed he had been working with Cooper for years and years, and he had his maps, and he had all his documents, and they were working together on this project. So I don't know how much of it came from Cooper and how much of it was this guy's invention, and then the nonfiction TV people got involved, and, you know, in an era that brought us Honey Boo Boo and Bayou Billionaires, you know what happens. Those guys are looking for a hook, and they'll do whatever they can. So I think that's probably where it really spun out of control.
All right. Wow. All right. So I got a story here about a lot of scientists are going to make a 3D map of the universe going back 11 billion years as part of a $70 million program.
Yeah, so this is an observatory called Kitt Peak in Arizona, and they had a telescope that had been built in the 70s, and these telescopes had kind of reached their limits decades ago, right, because they only have so much resolving power, and the atmosphere depending on where you are. Kitt's Peak is still in pretty good shape, but like if you're Mount Palomar down near San Diego in Southern California, there's so much light pollution and smog that it's pretty limited what they can do anymore. So rather than trying to change the sky, because you can't do that, they decided to change the instrument. So in this case, they added 5,000 fiber optic pickup devices where the receiving mirror used to be, or I guess it would be down near the eyepiece mount probably, and have retrofitted this thing so it's able to do these little receivers or these optical receivers on a little robotic arm, I gather, that can adjust very quickly. So, I mean, the numbers are remarkable. So this is a 12-foot diameter telescope. They can they're slated to map 35 million galaxies starting in 2020. They can scan 5,000 galaxies in 20 minutes with this crazy thing.
Whoa.
And the point of this is not really to image the galaxies, because we can do that all over the place. The point of this is to build this 3D map that will show them, and this is a bit of a stretch for me, so bear with me here, but basically, by showing the distribution of these things and how they're interacting, they're trying to infer where all the dark matter is, because we still don't really understand dark matter and dark energy. We don't know what it is. We don't really know where it is. We know it's out there. It makes up something like 90-95% of the cosmos, we think. So it's that stuff that causes everything that we can see to behave the way it does, but we can't see it. But what we might be able to do is guess where the concentrations are by observing how it affects other things. And this is so much of astronomy now. I mean, I would have loved to have been alive in the 1700s and 1800s when it was okay just to look at stuff.
Right.
Look, there's Mars. There's canals on it. Oh, wait, I'm mapping my retinas, whatever. You know, that was optical astronomy. Now it's all this detective work about inferring and really reaching. And, you know, it's the way they detect exoplanets. How do you tell? Well, the star wobbles a bit and it dimmed for a moment, so we think there might be a planet there. It's really cool, and I really admire these guys, but it's got to take some of the fun out of just looking through an eyepiece.
Yeah, geez. All right. Well, so this is a $70 million program.
Yeah, and it's what was interesting, it didn't explain why it said it was being funded by the Department of Energy.
Right. That's what I'm looking at here, and I'm like, what? That's a little weird.
Isn't it?
Yeah. That's very strange. All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that. All right. Hey, Rod, hang on.
Yeah.
Okay. Rod Pyle is with us. We got a few more space stories to talk about before we let him go, and if you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you at 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 for talk or text. All right, more space stuff coming up after this. And I think it's going to be a long, long time. The touchdown brings me round again to fight. I'm not the man they think I am at home. Oh, no, no, no. I'm a rocket man. Rocket man. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. And, Wildcard Wednesday will begin in a little bit. So if you want to get your requests in, that's any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about Chicagoisms and our town's lexicon with the Chicagopedia Volume 1, which is a really fun book that we're going to jump into. And talk about all the unique things that we say and do in this city that are strictly Chicago. And we're going to have a round of Know Your Onion. And also coming up is the Blackhawks Express from last night's loss. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN. Let's get back to our conversation. Rod Pyle is with us, author, journalist, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, and space expert. Rod, welcome back.
Thanks, sir.
All right. So there's another – I love how you title, you know, some of these stories that you send us. Titan. Titan, gas station at Saturn. Explain that one.
So Titan is Saturn's largest moon, and its most interesting moon, and it's the only moon in the solar system that has its own atmosphere, and it's dense. It's like between 1.5 and twice about 1.5 times as dense as Earth. But it's basically smog. So this weird moon, which has a surface temperature that averages almost minus 300 degrees Fahrenheit, so it's not a temperate place, has this, it's mostly nitrogen, so it's not unlike Earth that way. It's 90-something percent nitrogen. But the rest of it's methane and ethane, and so it's got a weather cycle not unlike Earth. It's got and we saw this first from Cassini. We kind of got a hint of it. It was orbiting from 2004 on. Then this lander called Huygens went down and landed on the surface and operated for about an hour and a half. So we got all these pictures, these imaging and radar and so forth as it was going down and once it was on the surface. So between that and looking at the Cassini data after that mission, they began to realize, you know, there's oceans on this planet, on this moon, but they're not water. They're methane and ethane. So it's got this hydrocarbon hydrological cycle, and it rains little organic hydrocarbon pellets into these big dunes by the ocean and so forth. So it looks like a place where you might actually want to hang out, but once you got there, you'd realize pretty quickly that it wasn't, and don't light a match.
Oh, really? Wow. All right.
I mean, I joke about the last part because that's the case. It's got lightning as far as we can tell, so that probably would be a problem. But it's just this wild, you know, completely, it's like inverted world, right? But these oceans, they're really large lakes, but I mean, we're talking about lakes the size of the Caspian Sea that are as deep as 600 feet. Those are all the things happening on the surface. They've got mountains and river deltas and all kinds of interesting geology. And that's all on top of ice. It's not a rocky surface. It's all happening on really super cold ice. And then down below that, they think there's a warmer ocean so that the crust may actually be completely separated from the core of the planet, just kind of floating there.
Wow.
So it's really wacko world. Yeah.
That's crazy. That is crazy.
Really dumb.
Yeah, wow. You know, every time Titan is mentioned, I think of the Kurt Vonnegut book, Sirens of Titan, which is one of my...
Oh, man.
I love that book. I absolutely love that book.
I don't even... I read it, but I don't even remember it at this point.
You know, years ago my friend David Cromer, who, by the way, recently won a Tony, directed and adapted that for the stage, and it was one of the most ambitious shows that I'd seen on a low budget for storefront theater, and he did a really nice job with it. So that was a long time.
Before
ago.
I forget,
yeah.
This is completely off topic. Do you go to CES?
Did I go to see what?
CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. Do you
ever
go to that?
No, I don't. I used to many years ago. I don't think it's open to the public.
Well, I think you have to pay a fee, but
yeah. But I used to.
Yeah,
go,
I
used to go years and years and years ago. I went. Why do you bring that up?
Because, not for the specific reason, but I'm so glad you asked. My 2019 book, Space 2.0, weirdly, kind of out of the blue, got a CES award. So they're doing an interview. They have a little stage tucked off in the corner somewhere that'll probably. Out of the 180,000 people there, probably 30 of them will show up. But they do an interview with, I think there's like 8 books they pick. And it's supposed to be kind of like about the transformational technologies, but somehow that book got one of them this year. So
wow,
I'm gonna be
congratulations.
There. I just wondered if you'd be around.
Congratulations.
It'll be fun to hang out. Well, thank you.
Here in Chicago?
No, it's in Vegas.
It's in Vegas because that's the only one that they do now, right? Is the one in Vegas because they used to do them locally.
That's what I thought. Yeah,
because we used to they had them at McCormick Place. That's where I used to go years and years ago.
Okay,
McCormick Place used to have the Consumer Electronics Show. So, but we have our good friend.
I wish it was still in other places because to get a hotel room in Vegas during that week is like $300.
Oh yeah, I bet, man. I bet it's cheaper for you to go to China.
it actually was.
You know what's we have our regular sort of gadget electronics guy that we have on who also happens to write for Mad Magazine and
it's a guy that's on the Leo Laporte show. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. Dick DiBartolo.
Yeah,
yeah.
I didn't know he was on with you.
You know, he's a regular. Cool. He's a regular, and he also created Dumb Dora is So Dumb and wrote all the great questions on Match Game. He's fantastic.
He wrote for the Match Game?
Yes, he did. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Oh my lord!
The classic
what
Match
a history
Game.
That guy has.
Oh, it's amazing. He's an amazing guy, and he's been like a gadget freak for years, and does reports, and he's a fantastic guest. So
he's funny, and he's got this encyclopedic knowledge of like the weirdest 1,010 products ever put out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Great guy.
Oh, that's
so
cool.
Here's an older story. Houston, we have moon trees.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
So on Apollo 14, which was 1971, Stuart Ruza was the command module pilot. So there was the commander and the lunar module pilot who would down the lunar surface, and the command module pilot flew the actual Apollo capsule and orbited the moon while those guys were down there doing their moonwalks. So Ruza had worked for the Forest Service, National Forest Service, and had been a smoke jumper. So when one of his old boss at the Forest Service heard he's going to the moon, he said, "Hey, take some seeds with you. Let's see what happens." And he said, "Okay," because they each had this personal allocation. So he took about 500 seeds of various kinds of trees, pine, sycamore, sweet gum, redwood, and fir. I didn't even know there was such a thing as sweet gum, and flew them on the flight, which is, you know, only 10 days, but it's leaving the magnetosphere, so it's going to be subjected to radiation. Of course, so are the guys. Brought them back, and then I guess he had them in this small container, part of his personal kit. When they opened it up at NASA, the container split, and the seeds went everywhere. So they gathered them back up, as many as they could, but they were mixed up now, so it kind of reduced the value of their experiment a little bit.
Yeah.
But they did send them off to a couple of research labs. They did germinate, most of them. And so for the bicentennial, they sent them all over the country for planting, and some internationally, I think Switzerland and Japan and Brazil got some. So a bunch of them are still around. There's one at the University of Arizona in Tucson. It's struggling a bit because it's a pretty arid environment there. Mm. There's one in Philadelphia. There was one planted in front of the White House, but it didn't make it. It died. There was one at KSC that got ripped out by a hurricane in 2017. I looked specifically for Illinois. Nothing there, I'm sad to say.
No.
But there's a lot of them, and apparently they're still getting seedlings from these trees and sending them around. So his daughter, Rosemary Ruza, started a foundation called the slogan is Ambassadors of Peace and Unification, but it's the Moon Tree Foundation.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, so she's going all over the world, basically giving away these seeds, doing plantings as public events and all that, and saying, you know, this is something that came back from space and the spirit of, and the whole, she kind of cites the overview effect thing of once you're out of the atmosphere into an orbit or out of the moon, you don't see dividing lines, you just see, you know, land masses with people squeezed together, and it's one for all and all for one. So she's doing some really good work with that.
That's great. That's really great. All right, Rod, you know, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Love having you on. And people can check out pilebooks.com. We have a link on our Facebook page, and we will talk to you again probably next month. Okay.
Great. I look forward to it. Thanks, okay. Nick.
All right, Rod Pyle, everybody. He's great. So much fun to talk to him, and he is absolutely an expert on space. Great guy. Okay. We thank Rod. All right. We're going to take a break. The news is coming up after this.
If it doesn't snow on Christmas, how's fat ass going to use that sleigh? In case of rain, would there be a train that'll speed him on his way? If it doesn't snow this Christmas, how's fat ass get around to us? Say he breaks down on his way to town, would they let
him? Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. By the way, I'm looking up at one of the screens here, and How I Met Your Mother is on, and James Vanderbeek is like guest appearance on it. And they've got a wig on him, and they've thinned his hair to make his head look even bigger.
Yeah.
Is he a regular on the show?
No, he shows up as, I want to say he's in a band or something, and is an ex-boyfriend of Robin's, because he was like, because her whole thing is that she's Canadian.
Oh, right.
And I think he's like an old Canadian boyfriend. And he puts on a whole accent and everything like that.
He's sitting at the table with the main four characters right now.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was possible to make James Vanderbeek's head look bigger.
He's got a serious noggin.
He's got a skull on him.
He's got a five head.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, an eight head. Not a four head, an eight head. That's what Spike Lee says to Rosie Perez in Do the Right Thing. You got a forehead. You got an eight head. Anyway, I didn't know that he was on. I never watched the show. And then I look up and I was like, why would they want to make his head look bigger?
Because they're trying to make him look. I think this is Robin has, you know, dreams of her old sweetheart from Canada. And then she finds out that he's gotten like thinning hair.
Yeah.
He's not talented anymore.
Yeah. He's wearing a t-shirt that says Chicago. Oh, and underneath a flannel. So that proves he's in a band.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Who requested that, and what was it?
So that was If It Doesn't Snow on Christmas by Joe Pesci.
I thought it was Pesci.
And that's coming to us from Big Ed.
Big Ed requesting a little holiday music from Joe Pesci. Because, you know, when you think the holidays, you think Joe Pesci.
Yeah, I had to navigate a few curse words in that one.
Oh, I bet. I bet. Joe Pesci. He's so great in The Irishman.
Glad to have him back.
Yeah. Apparently, he had to be convinced to come back. Scorsese was on Jimmy Kimmel the other night, and I watched it yesterday morning. And so he had to be convinced to come back because De Niro wanted him in the movie. And he was like, we'll give you the script. You can read the script. And he's like, I don't want to read the script. So they finally got him to do it once they told him that Pacino was on board. And Scorsese, but Jimmy Kimmel was like, how is it possible that you've never worked with Al Pacino, that this is the first time you've ever worked with Al Pacino? And he said, well, because, you know, when he hit it really big with The Godfather and then working with Sidney Lumet and those movies, those classic films, I was still doing little movies. And, you know, so he was out of my reach. And Kimmel was like, nobody's out of your reach. You're Martin Scorsese. So, it's good, good interview, though.
Yeah, it's weird to think at one time that Marty was small potatoes, small change.
Yeah. So, well, welcome back, everybody. This city is very unique, as we all know. And we have this really cool thing that the Chicago Sun-Times put out. It's called Chicagopedia Volume 1, and it's Our Town's Lexicons, Terms That Define the Second City. It's very, very cool, and it's a lovely little booklet, and the illustrations are really pretty cool, and they cover everything in this. By way of introduction, let me read this, and I want you guys to jump in. What are some of your favorite terms that we use in Chicago that are exclusive to Chicago, and some of your favorite things about Chicago? If you're from Chicago or the burbs, you might think the way we talk around here is pretty normal, and let me tell you, you'd be right. It's everyone else in the United States who talks strange, not us. Well, what we likely can all agree on is that we talk uniquely. We have our own accent, sure, but beyond that, we have our own language in a way. Terms and tones that are very, very Chicago. Some call it Chicagoese, some call it Chicago speak. Whatever you call it, we're capturing it here in Chicagopedia, which is published by the Chicago Sun-Times, and it highlights our local terminology and linguistic quirks. So we've got examples now, and it's all broken up into different categories. There are different, you know, they have a table of contents with different categories, and the first one that they touch on is buildings. And again, I want to give credit with the illustrations. Susan Smith did the illustrations for this, and they're really lovely. But this is just a lot of fun talking about what makes us so unique, the way we talk, the way we express ourselves here in Chicago. 312-981-7200. Willis Tower, what nobody except overseas tourists calls the building formerly known as the Sears Tower, once the tallest building in the world. I still call it Sears Tower.
Yeah.
I still call it Sears Tower.
It's just strange to me. It's strange to me to call it by anything else, or the John Hancock calling it anything other than that.
Yeah.
Because it's still just technically the street address at this point. It hasn't been purchased.
It hasn't been, yeah, right. And then that's the next one here, the Hancock. What everybody still calls the iconic high-rise formerly known as the John Hancock Center. The 100-story behemoth that anchors the north end of the Magnificent Mile is now technically just goes by the address 875 North Michigan. Some also know it by an old nickname, Big John. I never called it Big John. I used to just call it the Hancock. And I'm still going to call it the Hancock. The Madhouse on Madison. That's the nickname for the old Chicago Stadium at 1800 West Madison, built by promoter Patty Harmon in 1929. The old barn was the loud, longtime home of the Blackhawks and later the Bulls. It hosted Democratic and GOP conventions, title fights, rodeos, an indoor pro football title game, and Mayor Anton Cermak's funeral. They don't mention concerts? I can't tell you the number of concerts I saw at the old stadium. I saw Zeppelin there. I saw Jethro Tull there. I saw Kiss there. Tons of concerts. It hosted a lot of concerts. Graced by Bobby Hull, MJ, Sinatra. Oh, well, okay. The Stones, Led Zeppelin, and the legendary Barton Organ featured sprawling fire escapes, low ceilings, low balcony ceilings, and legend has it, ghosts in the lower levels. Torn down in 1995, replaced by the United Center, which has embraced the Madhouse nickname.
How do you feel about that, by the way?
About what?
About the UC referring to itself as the Madhouse.
I like it.
I know that some old timers out there that really they're like, no, the Madhouse was the Chicago Stadium.
Well, I agree. I mean, I agree. You know, that it will always be the old Chicago Stadium. But I like the fact that they refer to the UC as a Madhouse. I like it. Madhouse on Madison, because it's still. I mean, you know, we're the only team in the NHL. You know, the only team in the NHL that goes nuts during the national anthem, and that's always an event. Like, people get there to, people go to Hawks games because people go nuts during the national anthem. That started at the old barn. Yeah, and now it's a tradition to go insane during the national anthem. And it's funny too because I've been to games, you know, in different cities, it's funny when a lot of Hawks fans are in the building because they'll start cheering during the national anthem, and it's only about maybe a third of the crowd is cheering, but you can always tell when there are fans who are on the road because they'll go nuts during the national anthem even when they're on the road.
I know they hate it in Nashville.
Well, yeah, because half of the crowd are more than half of the crowd are Hawks fans.
I want to say they had a program either a year or two ago where if you turned in your Blackhawks jersey or something, they'd give you a Predators jersey in return.
Well, you know, they also tried to make people for the Hawks series is where they had to buy a package of tickets for other games. Like, you couldn't just purchase Hawks games.
Mm-hmm.
That was a rule because they were trying to weed out all the Hawks fans.
Right.
That go to Nashville. I mean, it's packed. I mean, it's great. Let's take a break here. What do you guys? We're talking buildings. We got the Northwestern Station to talk about. We've got the post office, the old post office. We got all kinds of great stuff. What makes Chicago completely unique? The way we talk. What are some of your favorite terms and your favorite things about how we express ourselves as Chicagoans? That's what we're talking about. And we want to hear from you at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Wildcard Wednesday. You hear me? Welcome with me. Any artist, any song, anything, 312-981-7200. Who requested that?
It's coming to us from Mike in Old Irving Park. It's the Kazakhstan national anthem from Borat.
Yeah. Not a fan. Mike in Old Irving Park. Exciting stuff happened in that neighborhood last night. Scary stuff. So, all right, we're going to get back to this Chicagopedia, our town's lexicon. What are some of your favorite terms and your favorite things? We're going through some buildings and stuff here in the city. We got at the Northwestern Station, former name, still used by many for the downtown railroad hub that and station located in the lower part of Helmut John's. A glass and steel high rise at Madison and Canal. The station was renamed in 1997 in honor of a former governor and railroad supporter. But trying to quickly tell a cabbie, please take me to the Richard B. Ogilvie Transportation Center, could make you miss your train. The massive post office. The massive limestone building best known for swallowing up inbound traffic on the Eisenhower Expressway as it reaches downtown. Built in 1921 With additions in 1932, the old Maine post office was once the world's largest mail facility. It was built with a two-story hole at the bottom for a planned expressway, which was finally built decades later. Abandoned for a younger, sleeker building in 1996. It's been talked about ever since with new tenants and development. The projects. Sprawling, sometimes towering public housing developments that once helped sadly define Chicago's landscape. Many have been torn down under Mayor Richard M. Daley, with the poor offered Section 8 rent vouchers instead. And the one that they have, the sketch of which, of course, is Cabrini Green. How about this? The two flat. You got to love the two flat.
An amazing icon of architecture, honestly. Yeah.
A residential two-story building with a common front entrance and separate residences on each floor. One floor is often reserved reluctantly for the mother-in-law. Common source of extra income and aggravation for Chicagoans, similar to a three-flat. Stroger Hospital, the near West Side Hospital that treats scores of gunshot victims each year, sometimes serving as a training facility for military field medics who need hands-on experience with traumatic injuries. 26th and Cal, shorthand for Cook County's imposing criminal courthouse at the corner of 26th and California on the southwest side. How about this? Downstate. This is geography now. We've moved on to geography. Any place in Illinois outside of Cook, Lake DuPage, Will, Kane, or McHenry counties, even if it is actually upstate further north than Chicago, such as Rockford. Downstate.
I know some people don't have a great sense of humor about that one.
No. I think it's funny.
Yeah, because it just goes to show that when you live in Chicago or the collar counties, it kind of just revolves around that. Even though there's a lot of great places downstate. It just, Rockford, downstate. Isn't that north?
Rockford is downstate. How about Uptown? That's where you live.
How about it?
A once perennially downtrodden, now increasingly uptrodden section of the north side, roughly, sometimes quite roughly, around Broadway and Lawrence. A place, never a direction one cannot grab a cab going uptown in Chicago. It is a crowded apartment in Uptown, according to Studs Terkel in Hard Times. The Playpen. This popular spot just off Ohio Street Beach, where the scores of Chads and Trixies go to party on boats during the summer months. The Playpen.
I've never actually heard it referred to as the Playpen, but it makes sense.
Yeah, I've heard it referred to as it, not very often, but I have heard that term in the past. The Northwest Side. I'm familiar with that. Northwest Side. And their sketch here is a couple of cops at Superdog. The part of the city opposite the Southwest Side. The Northwest Side is where you'll find O'Hare Airport, Superdog, Milwaukee Avenue, and a lot of cops and firefighters living there. Which is true. A lot of police officers live on the Northwest Side. Skokie. A north suburb with a once huge Jewish population where Nazis, yes, you heard that right, wanted to march in the 70s. That's true. Everybody's seen the Blues Brothers. How about Kenwood? The South Side neighborhood that includes former President Barack Obama's Chicago mansion, not Hyde Park, which is often mistaken, cited. The Obama's family red brick revival purchased in 2005 for $1.65 million is just steps away from Hyde Park, though, but it's Kenwood. Cicero.
Oh, boy.
You got to love Cicero.
Who doesn't?
West suburb that Al Capone infamously colonized. Current town president was elected and reelected despite a news story revealing that FBI surveillance teams spotted him chatting with reputed mob dealers at a local restaurant in the late 90s. About the content of those conversations, it wasn't important. He said maybe it was about the Cubs or something.
Maybe.
Let's see. 708 area code says, here's a calling the Aragon Ballroom the Brawl Room. Yes, we do. We call it the Brawl Room. 815 area code is Jeff in Lakemore, Illinois, says, did you ever see UFO in the late 70s? No, I've told that story many times. I had tickets for the night that they ended up recording the album Strangers in the Night at the amphitheater, and I couldn't go. 773 area code says, we are the city of neighbors. Yes, we are. I would agree with that. 815 area code says, growing up in the suburbs, the living room is always referred to as the front room, but pronounced front room. Very true. Next neighborhood here is the West Loop. Once called the Near West Side, until gentrification pushed out the poor and added pricey condos, chic shops, and designer dogs. Olympia Fields, fancy South suburb that no longer fancies its reputation as being the one-time home of R&B singer accused pervert R. Kelly. That's very true. Our next one is
Berwyn.
That's right.
Berwyn.
Yep, Berwyn, a working-class bungalow-laden suburb near Cicero. Two, it's a north side avenue that boasts a red line stop. Yes, it does. I used to get off at that stop when I was living in Andersonville to get back to my apartment when I would take the red line down. And then finally, the punchline to a long-running gag by Svengoolie on a locally produced Saturday night horror and sci-fi movie show. Whenever Sven says Berwyn, it's echoed by a resounding
Berwyn.
That's right. And the sketch is of Rich holding a sign that says Berwyn.
You know, Howard Stern mentions Svengoolie like a lot. I've noticed that.
Does he really?
He does.
Well,
I mean, noticed it over the last couple of weeks, especially around Halloween, but mentioned him a lot.
Well, I mean, you know, Rich is syndicated.
Yeah.
So, you know, they show him in New York. So, let's see. Here's Jay on WGN. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Nick. How's it going?
Good.
Love your show.
Thank you.
And I wanted to mention that language that's uniquely Chicago. I used to live west of Gladstone Park near Northwest Highway, and the locals used to call the area of Northwest Highway Central and Milwaukee, where they can come together. They called it the crotch.
Yeah. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
So that's where I did a lot of my, you know, it's a very big commercial area, banks and stores and dealers.
They used to have the Blue Angel. The Blue Angel used to be there.
The Blue Angel was there. Yeah. I used to ride that's Jefferson Park.
Right.
I used to ride the Jefferson L there also when I had my car fixed. Great show, Nick.
All right. Thanks, Jay. All right. Yeah, that's a specific area right there. How about Stone Park? A tiny west suburb that may be rivaled by only South Suburban Harvey in strip clubs, including one that operated for a while right next to a convent. Yeah, that's Stone Park, man. That's definitely Stone Park. My uncle used to be, my uncle on my dad's side used to be a politician in Stone Park in the 70s. Yeah, and Stone Park has strip clubs all over the park. They used to, I haven't been to Stone Park in many, many years, but they used to have strip clubs all over the place. Pilsen, best neighborhood to see murals, eat tacos, and cry over gentrification. Dalton, a south suburb with a name frequently mispronounced by outsiders. It's not Dalton or Dalton, it's Dalton. Located just off the Bishop Ford Freeway and surrounded by Cal City, South Holland, Harvey, Riverdale, and Chicago. It's also the native land of former Eagles QB Donovan McNabb and former NBA star Quinn Buckner and Chicago Sun-Times own Richard Roper. Dalton. How about Greektown? gentrified area west of the Loop where very few Greeks actually live, similar to Little Italy having few Italians anymore, but Chinatown boasts numerous residents of Chinese heritage.
I love Chinatown.
Do you?
Yeah, it's a great place, tons of great stuff to eat, and it's beautiful when you walk in through and see all like the architecture and
yeah.
everything.
I love Chinatown too. I haven't been there in a while. And then finally, K-Town. I love this. What Westsiders often call the stretch of the city between Pulaski and Cicero, so named because numerous north-south streets there begin with the letter K, among them Kedvale, Kenneth, Kenton, Kilpatrick, Knox, Costner. A plan adopted in 1913 but only partially fulfilled called for Chicago street names to be alphabetized from the Indiana-born or grown west. The first mile would be A, streets, the second mile B, etc. 11 miles out, that gave Chicago the K streets. After L, M, and O streets, the scheme ended on the city's western edge with the P streets, such as Pontiac, Plainfield, Panama, Page, and Pacific. I like the stretch of, if you go a little bit west, you know, you like north, you know, if you go west, further west, I've always you know, hung out a lot in the area where there were M streets. Meade, Major, Menard, all that stuff. Yeah, so that's where, because my high school was right there. It was at Major and Pertot. And the McDonald's that I worked at, as I mentioned before, was Irving and Major. And it's still there. That McDonald's is still there. So, all right, more Chicagoese. What do you love about it? Next chapter that we're going to do after we break here is food and drink. And you know there's a lot to talk about when it comes to food and drink in Chicago. What makes this Chicago? Chicago speak, our lexicon. 312-981-7200. We'll get back to it right after this on WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. I'm looking up. You know, Friends is on now. And one of the characters has a giant turkey on his head. I think it might be Joey.
Is it the guy, the really dumb guy? Or can you not tell because the turkey's already on
the head? No, the turkey's on his head. His head is completely inside the turkey.
Oh, my God.
Like the cavity of the turkey. It's a giant turkey, and his head is inside it. Sometimes I look up when the show is on, and I just go, what the hell is happening? Lisa Kudrow and Courtney Cox are trying to get... Well, it's okay, because Chandler now just came in, so it's not it's got to be Joey.
It's got to be.
Got to be Joey, who's got his head stuck in a giant turkey.
What will they think of next?
Oh, man.
This is comedy gold.
What is it, 25th anniversary, right?
Yeah, they're going to do a reunion for HBO Max.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, this is by the way, this is a flashback episode. So they're all sitting around a table going, hey, remember that time when I had a turkey on my head? That kind of thing.
Oh, it's a clip show.
It's a clip show, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a Thanksgiving show, because it looks like there's pie on the table, and they're sitting around the table, and they're remembering funny stuff that happened to them.
The good old days.
Good old Friends. all right, let's see. We're talking about the Chicagopedia from the Chicago Sun-Times. What language do you love, and words that you love, and phrases, and how we express ourselves in this city? The next category is food and drink. We'll get to that in a second, but we got a couple of texts here. And if you want to join us via text or talk, it's 312-981-7200. Calling an area between Three Flats and Berwyn called gangways. That's just not in Berwyn. Gangways are in the city as well. So, yeah. That's what you do. You cut through gangways. When I was a kid, I used to cut through gangways all the time. 630 area code, Chicago even has its own swear word. It's, I can't say it on the air, but remember that show, remember that show Jag?
Yeah.
TV show Jag? You know, the opposite of on?
It's that.
It's that word. And it's my favorite word of all time. Out of state people find it funny. I will tell you this, the origin of that word is from Pittsburgh. That word, mm-hmm. that's from Pittsburgh. We use it better, and we use it more. I use it all the time.
Yeah, it's
I use
shocking.
It all the time. I mean, I have to curb myself when I'm on the air, when I'm talking about someone I don't like, or someone who I think is an idiot, for not, like, that's the first word that pops into my head. Yeah. It's my favorite word of all, I'm not kidding, it's my favorite word of all time.
Well, it was recently added to the Oxford English Dictionary.
Yes, it was. I posted that on my Facebook page, and I just wrote, you're welcome. It's been added to the Oxford Dictionary. But again, its origin comes from Pittsburgh.
Right.
And I didn't know that till...
What was that? Ted McClelland mentioned that, I know.
Yeah. I didn't know that till a few years ago.
Yeah.
I always thought it was a Chicago thing. You know, I always thought it was a Chicago thing because it's like, you know, I mean, I've never heard it anywhere else. I've said it in different states, and people look at me and go, what are you talking about? But it's my favorite word. It's in this book too.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do a book about Chicagoese and not have that word in it.
That's important.
It's such a good word. I mean, it's just such a great. I mean, I love the way it sounds.
When it's so chocolatey.
When it's delivered perfectly. No other word sound like no other insult sounds better than that one. I wrote it into every play that I've ever written. That word is at least in there once. At least. Every play.
You should just sit there and with one of those counters.
It's also in a bunch of, you know, this is another reason why I thought it was a pretty much exclusively Chicago, because I had never heard it anyplace else, and I heard it all my life growing up. All of my friends used it. I use it on a regular basis. And then, and it's also featured, like, how many times has David Mamet used it in the stuff that he writes?
You can make a drinking game out of it.
Yeah. So, and then I found out it was Pittsburgh, and I looked it up, and it's true. It originated in Pittsburgh.
Well, that area of the, eastern United States,
yeah.
especially if you get up into kind of like upstate New York and parts of Pennsylvania, we have a lot of things in common.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of stuff in common with the Midwest. So we're not so different. So it doesn't surprise me that it migrated over here.
And it's such a great word. It's Chicago. Okay, Chicagopedia, our lexicon continues. What phrases or words or things about this city, how we exclusively express ourselves, which ones do you want to mention? 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're in the food and drink category, the Walnut Room, a staple of Christmas in Chicago. The stately seventh-floor dining room was the first department store restaurant when it opened more than a century ago in the Marshall Fields on State Street. Now a Macy's treasure, it's named for the dark walnut paneling, which was imported from Russia. Food and drink, moving on to deep dish. This casserole-esque style of pizza that locals eat once or twice every year, typically when out-of-town relatives come in to visit. There you go. Absolutely true. I can't remember the last time I had deep dish. I seriously can't remember the last time I had deep dish.
I will say I tend to crave it in the winter because it is so filling and warming.
Yeah.
But no, if I'm going to get a pizza, I'm probably going to get it like
thin crust, cut in squares,
square cut,
as God intended.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I've never been in a New York style either. Slices way too big.
No. I do not like New York style. I people who fold pizza make me nuts. When I see, that's how they eat pizza, you know. In the East, as you say, in New York and in the East, they fold the slice. Slice is so big, you have to fold it, and then you eat that. No. Tavern cut, man. Cut in squares, thin crust. That's Chicago pizza. Deep dish, fine. But it's absolutely true. The description that they have here is that it's once or twice a year, typically when out-of-town relatives come in or, you know, to visit.
Have you had that pizza pot pie at the...
Oh, yeah.
I think that's really cool.
That's really tasty. Oven grinder.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, over on Clark.
Love it.
It's not pizza.
No, it's not pizza.
But it's
a pizza puff. Pie.
Yeah, it's weird. But I like it.
Yeah.
It's tasty.
It's hard to get a table, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Frango. Minty chocolate candy that's one of the lasting legacies of the Marshall Field department stores. You like the Frango?
I don't mind it.
It's good.
My grandma used to get it for us every year for Christmas.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, that's another thing. Like, you would eat at the Walnut Room, then you would get your Frango Mints. Get a ton of boxes of Frango Mints.
I'm really glad that the Walnut Room is still there.
It's
beautiful.
It is beautiful. How about this? Polish. That's one, related to Poland. Two, a hot dog on steroids with a source of heartburn, a kielbasa. It's a truncation of Polish sausage, a tubular meat product made with garlic, black pepper, and herbs. That's a Polish. You like to have a Polish?
I don't mind a Polish every once in a while.
Franchise.
Now, this is something I need to try.
You've still not tried a franchise.
I don't know where to get one.
Like I said before, the Blue Angel was the place I would get them all the time. A fate-tempting delicacy, a beef hot dog sliced in half, stuffed with cheese, and wrapped in bacon before being deep-fried and served on a bun. it's just ridiculous, but it's lovely. Do we have weather? Oh, we're getting it. How about the combo? Now, see, combos are a little too much for me. It's a little too much. The ingenious marriage of the Italian beef and the Italian sausage sandwiches. The sausage is hidden beneath the shaved beef on the same Italian bread roll, offering the hungry or indecisive diner a double delight. I love both of the things on a combo very much. I love Italian sausage and I love Italian beef, and they taste good together, but it always seems too much to me. Yeah. I very rarely get a combo. Very, very rarely. Only if I'm like maybe is ridiculously hungry. And then we get to Italian beef. Number one, thinly sliced beef seasoned with garlic, oregano, and other spices and served on Italian bread. A Chicago creation, it's spread nationwide thanks to transplants who can't do without it. The slow-cooked top butt meat can be eaten dipped in beef broth, sweet with sweet peppers, hot with giardiniera, and cheesy with cheese, or as a combo with an Italian sausage tucked into the beef. In Chicago, it's a source of pride, competition, and dirty shirts. Number two, the sandwich is not known to be served anywhere in Italy. That's a Chicago thing. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to join us. What makes us uniquely Chicago? What things do we say and things that we do make us uniquely Chicago? The Sun-Times put out the Chicagopedia Volume 1, Our Town's Lexicon, and it's fun stuff. Unique to Chicago. 312-981-7200.
Over 40 feet high.
Great big.
Just a little bit shy.
Great big.
But a super strong guy.
Yep, that's me.
Grape Ape.
I used to love Grape Ape. You ever see Grape Ape, Tom?
I think I saw maybe a little bit of it, but I was never drawn to it.
Was that supposed to be a pun?
No.
Was it animated?
No. I preferred... I was a big Megilla Gorilla fan.
Sure, Megilla Gorilla rules. I'm a fan of Grape Ape. By the way, Chandler just got a butcher knife dropped into his foot.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? What will they do
now? They're in the hospital, and he's dressed like Don Johnson from Miami Vice.
What a ridiculous situation they're in.
I can't believe how the friends help each other.
They're such good friends.
Because they're friends. Welcome back, everybody. Wildcard Wednesday. You mean Wildcard Wednesday? Who requested Grape Ape?
That's coming to us from Dino.
All right, Dino. There you go. Welcome back. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell coming up at 5, and the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right here on WGN. We are talking about what it's like to be Chicagoans. Chicagoese, Chicagopedia. The Chicago Sun-Times put out a very, very cool booklet called Chicagopedia Volume 1. That just goes through different categories of what makes us Chicago, how we express ourselves, what we say, words, and all kinds of cool stuff. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We got a bunch of texts here. 773 area code says, was the term Coke started in Chicago?
Now, are we talking about the soft drink or the booger sugar?
I don't know. I've never heard that before.
I don't know.
847 area code says, wow, Studs Terkel was a Chicago treasure. I really miss him. He was great.
Amazing.
630 area code says, we taught the J word. That would be, you know, the, remember the TV show JAG?
Yeah.
And the opposite of on?
Uh-huh.
That word. We taught the J word to Bono, and he says it in the Vertigo Live DVD from the United Center. What?
Is he referring to himself?
What? What, you don't like Bono?
Not particularly. I do like you too.
I like Bono. He's a great singer. Great frontman. 847 area code. My college friends from back in the 70s are known as the six, that word, J words. 815 area code says Clark Griswold's use of that word in Vacation is awesome and quoted often. It's true. It's very funny because the family's from Chicago. So the Griswolds are from Chicago. So, of course, he's going to say that word. All right. Here is Trucker Rich on WGN. Hi, Rich.
Hey, Nick. How you doing tonight?
All right.
Vic will love this because he was in the Air Force and I was in the Army. And he's mentioned the difference in the way we lived in the field. You know, they went to hotels and stuff. We'd lived in holes in the ground. But back in 85, we got sent down to Honduras, and I had to run back into the main town, the airport there, to Tegucigalpa, and pick up a bulldozer. And I had my first Chicago-style hot dog there in Tegucigalpa, Honduras.
Wait a minute.
Yes.
That your first Chicago-style hot dog was in Honduras?
Yes, in Tegucigalpa at the airport.
Okay, that's weird.
The Air Force guys there had shipped down there a hot dog cart, and they were selling them.
Wow.
And just, you know, like, the Air Force guys, they had air-conditioned tents and real food, and we were eating food out of bags and living in holes, but the guy was selling them down there, and that was the first Chicago-style hot dog I had, and, I mean, they were importing the stuff, you know?
Yeah.
The true Vienna beef hot dogs and the lime green or neon green.
Yep. Relish.
And relish. And you know, so I can say my first Chicago-style hot dog was in Tegucigalpa, Honduras.
Wow, that's weird.
From the Air Force. And then the guy actually threw their cart on the back of a pickup truck, and they'd run around to our job sites and sell the hot dogs. I think they made more money from us buying hot dogs off them than they did in their monthly salary down there.
Wow, that's crazy. All right, Rich, thanks for the call.
Yep. All right. Have a good one.
Now Courtney Cox has a big turkey on her head.
When will they learn?
It's just wackiness. She's got a fez and sunglasses over the turkey. So, this is hilarious.
They'll never know the difference.
Here's Dan on WGN. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, good morning, Nick.
Hey.
Hey, back in the 70s, we used to go down to Maxwell Street all the time, but... maybe a pork chop sandwich. We used to load a weed and then go down to Maxwell Street. And what about penny candy?
Sure.
You know, I was just thinking of that.
Yeah. All right. Pork chop sandwich.
That's where you could go. One time we went down there, we were all stoned and that, but I needed a hubcap. I didn't even have to get out of the car.
No, of course. Yeah, no, absolutely. Maxwell Street was a really special place at one time. It was amazing. It was used to go down there every Sunday. All right, Dan, thanks.
All right,
take it easy. I love that. What do we want to do today? Let's blow some weed and go to Maxwell Street.
I love that.
Get a pork chop sandwich and a hubcap.
Some used gym socks.
All right, the news is coming up next. All right, welcome back, Wild Card Wednesday. You make Wild Card Wednesday! 312-981-7200. Any artist, any song, anything. Who requested the Lost in Space theme?
That's coming to us from Glenn.
Now, did he specify which Lost in Space theme?
He said the original one.
Oh, okay. Because there were two.
Yeah, I've got both of them here, but yeah. I played the original.
Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah, we're back. It's Nick DiGilio here. Coming up after the 4:30 news, we want you to call during the 4:30 news. First two people will be our two contestants for another edition. Oh, there's no 4:30 news. That's right. Well, anyway, call at 4:30, and you'll get in here. So after 4:30, we'll get you. I'm sorry. I forgot. I was just used to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, after 4:30, we will jump into Know Your Onion. So Know Your Onion, that's where Tom will read you a news headline, and you have to decide whether it's real or from the satirical, funny, fake newspaper, The Onion. And if you get a majority of them right, you win. That's how it works. So at 4:30, I'll call out for you guys to call in at 312-981-7200. So there you go. Interesting to note, Tom, that they did reopen Irving Park now.
Yeah.
So
back on open.
This insanity that you guys have been hearing about this morning literally happened about two blocks away from my front door. It was insane. It was absolutely insane. I didn't know what was going on outside. All I know is that for about 20 minutes, all I heard were emergency vehicles flying down Irving Park and then helicopters. So I knew something was crazy was going on. So I grabbed my phone and I started looking at the news feeds and stuff. And I saw the breaking. I started following breaking news, and I got to tell you, it's very, very weird to see helicopter shots of your neighborhood with, you know, tons of emergency vehicles and cop cars right outside your window, like two blocks away. It was very strange to watch that. I'm just watching developing breaking news on my phone, and I'm like, yeah, it's happening right outside my door. It's a little strange. Horrible story, too, and we'll keep you posted on what's going on there. Hey, all right, we're back, and we're talking about Chicagoese, things that make us what we are here in Chicago. Chicagopedia from the Chicago Sun-Times, they put it out. It's our lexicon, and we're talking about a bunch of stuff that makes us unique, things that we say, phrases that we use, that kind of stuff. 847 area code says, Greek family restaurants like Omega Delta, etc., have the franchisee. So there you go. You marked that down there, Tom. You got to get yourself a franchisee. 630 area code, Chicago, WGN Radio Studio at the base of the Chicago Tribune Tower. The Showcase Studio was never my favorite studio to work in.
I liked it.
I was not a fan of the Showcase Studio. I was one of the only people that worked upstairs on the seventh floor when we were over at the Trib building. 630 area code says, for those on a budget, Portillo's has a not-so-well-known gravy boat. It's $1.15. It's beef. It's a beef without the meat. Dipped bread. Yeah, they. It's a gravy sandwich. Hey, guys, Gangway and the Clincher. Sure, 16-inch softball. 16-inch softball, unique to this city. It says, stay safe, Northside Sarge. Island Cafe and Island Lake has a Frankie cheese on their menu. It's just like the franchisee the Blue Island used to have.
It's good to know there's options.
Yeah. I think more places should have the franchisee. They should probably just open up a restaurant that serves nothing but franchisee. Does Portillo's have a franchisee?
That's a good question. Mm. I know they'll do many types of dogs. They'll do a chili dog.
Yeah.
Chicago style, many style of dogs.
That's I always eat every time I go to Portillo's. I get a chili dog.
There, it's a great.
It's the best chili dog it's the best chili dog in the world. And they never put too much chili on it. It's always the right amount of chili. It's the best. So all right, 312-981-7200. All right, how about this? We're talking about terms and stuff that we use for food. Pop. There's three things here. It's number one, a carbonated soft drink in Chicago, the rest of the Midwest and Canada, soda on the East Coast, Coke in the South. That's what I love that in the South, that it's a Coke, no matter what it is. I'll take a Coke. What kind? 7-Up. That's absolutely what they do. Pop is also a father, and number three definition is to smack, say, in the nose. All right. Healthy Food, longtime Bridgeport restaurant that was oddly named for it did not serve healthy food, but Lithuanian dishes. The Jibarito, two flattened fried plantains act as a bun in this sandwich that features tendered steak, mayonnaise, and other toppings. Its origins are debatable, but most would say that this garlic-infused sandwich is a Humboldt Park creation. Enjoy it with a cold Malta or cola champagne. All right. Then we're going to get into some streets coming up here. Let's see. Here's Scott on WGN. Hi, Scott.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I think the Ball Hawks are a Chicago thing. The guys outside Wrigley Field that catch the home runs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That doesn't happen. That doesn't happen anymore.
That's sad.
Yeah, well,
because
it was,
they got the giant jumbotrons all over the place now, and the ball doesn't sail out of Wrigley as much as it used to.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And one other thing, the tamales we have here that are wrapped in the paper, the cornmeal ones, you can't find them anywhere else.
Yeah, I love those tamales.
Yeah,
I love them. I think they're great. All right, thank you, Scott.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, those tamales that he's talking about that you can get at hot dog joints, get the little strings on each end. You know, covered in paper. There's no husk or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Those are good. Those are good tamales, man.
And shout out to the tamale guy. Everybody knows.
You gotta love tamale the tamale guy.
Good man.
Gotta love the tamale guy. Can't tell you the number of times I bought tamales from that guy sitting in bars. Comes in tamale. Got the little handheld cooler. $5.
He's doing the Lord's work.
Oh. I don't know how often I had those tamales sober, but they're good. Okay, let's break here for some weather, and then we'll get back into the Chicagopedia. And here's your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center. Today, a couple of degrees milder with a low in the low to mid-40s, and those temperatures will rise after midnight. Tomorrow, windy, milder. Morning rain will change to showers by late morning. Above normal high with the mid-50s, showers will diminish by the afternoon with a low near 30 at night. Friday, partly cloudy, breezy, much colder, high in the upper 30s, a low in the upper 20s. Saturday, chance for light snow or flurries. Chilly, high in the upper 30s. Normal high for that day would be in the mid-40s. Sunday, partly sunny, breezy, a little bit milder, seasonable high in the mid-40s. Partly cloudy overnight, and a low in the low 30s. It's currently 38 degrees at O'Hare. It's 40 at Midway, 40 at the lake front. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back. Chicagopedia, more of Chicagoese coming up right here on WGN.
When it comes to Friday, I always learn. Don't try to teach me. Got nothing to learn. Because, baby, I'm gifted. You see what I mean? USDA certified lead.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here at 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich follows with the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 with your morning drive. Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday. It's any artist, any song, anything. 312-981-7200. Who was that, and who requested it?
So that was The Killers with The Man by Ike. You wanted to hear that one.
Oh, okay. All right, well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. The Chicago Sun-Times put out this really cool little book called Chicagopedia Volume 1. It's our town's lexicon. We're talking about what makes us unique, how we express ourselves, the words, the phrases, the food, the city itself, 312-981-7200. Here's Carrie on WGN. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, morning, Nick.
Hey.
Not what I was calling, but yeah, the Coke thing is true in the South, except if you live in Atlanta. I got a good buddy there, and if you order a Coke in Atlanta, they better give you a Coca-Cola, because that's where everybody is. I watched them go ballistic once when they brought in a Pepsi, but other than that, that is true.
Yeah.
So two things. In your Italian beef piece that you read, it's not just going nationwide. It is, but they're not real. Unless maybe if you find a Portillo's in a different state.
Yeah.
They're basically French dips. And I always ask, because it will say Chicago style Italian beef, and I travel a lot for work, and I always ask, and like, can you get that wet or dipped? And they're like, no, we just give you a little thing of juice on the side.
Yeah,
like,
that's a French dip.
That's a French dip.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, in Madison, Wisconsin, I lived there for 18 years for work, and you can't get one there. I had to learn how to make my own Italian beef. So it really is a true Chicago thing.
And also the beef that's used in a French dip is not like the Italian beef.
No, it's dry and it's different.
It's good. It's just not seasoned the right way. It doesn't taste like a Chicago Italian beef.
Yep.
Yeah.
No, that really is a true Chicago thing. And then the question I had, maybe some of the listeners could chime in. And I think I'm about your age. I'm about 52.
Yeah.
When did the Chicago style pizza thing really become such a trademark? Because when I was a kid growing up, And I know that that's about when Malnati's and Geno's and Uno's started, is about 67-ish. When I was a kid, we ate thin crust square cut pizza. We never ate.
No.
We never did. We had, you know, several. We lived in Logan Square and then Belmont Central, and we had, you know, a bunch of pizza joints.
Sure.
We never ate it all through the 70s. So when did it become such a thing?
I really don't know. I mean, I'm like you. I'm 54. Like you, pizza to me, it was, when I was growing up, always thin crust and cut in squares. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I went. I got a friend that lives in outside of Peoria, and I went down there not too long ago, and he said, "Oh, there's a good pizza place, but you're not going to like it being from Chicago because it's thin crust cut in squares." I'm like, "No, that's what I grew up with." He's like, "Really?
That's pizza." Like, yeah, that's pizza. Yeah.
I'm just curious. Sometimes you have a pizza expert on, so maybe next time.
We'll find out the history of when it started, when the deep dish thing really started. Okay, Kerry, thanks. Yeah.
Thanks.
See ya.
Yeah, there's a lot of conflicting reports on that.
Yeah.
It ranges from starting in 1956, 1943, 1926. Who knows?
Pizza for me, thin crust cut in squares, as God intended. All right, let's talk about Chicagopedia streets. The Mile, Magnificent Mile. Beautiful. Right out here, you can see it if you look behind me. Lakeshore Drive, also known as The Drive or LSD. The fantastic Lower Wacker.
where boys become men.
Here's how they describe Lower Wacker. A long, frigid, and filthy harbor for the down and out, now fenced off wrought iron labyrinth. Also, a threatened worst-case scenario destination. You keep it up, you'll be living on Lower Wacker, is a phrase. An underground shortcut through the city. Elwood Blues, this is definitely Lower Wacker Drive. If my estimations are correct, we should be very close to the Honorable Richard J. Daley Plaza. Western, the longest street in the city. 23.5 miles from Howard to 119th.
That's wild to think about.
Yeah. And they're also, it's also known as Auto Roll, where you, because there's so many car lots on Western. Yeah, it's Glengarry Glen Ross. They make a reference to that nobody outside of Chicago would get. Moss says it. In the movie, that would be Ed Harris. He says, "You remember when we were working on Western Avenue? You know, man doesn't walk on the lot lest he wants to buy." Roosevelt Road. And then how do we refer to Wisconsin and Indiana? Cheeseheads. Lake Geneva, crowded Wisconsin vacation spot that residents of the North Side neighborhoods and the North Shore suburbs flock to every weekend in the summer. You got Northwest Indiana. Outdoors, you got spring, generally regarded as a two-week transition between winter and road construction season. The big snow, not the blizzard of 79 that famously cost Mayor Bolandic his job. Rather, it's the blizzard of 67. On January 26th and 27th of 1967, a whopping 23 inches of snow was dumped on Chicago, shutting down the city and forcing thousands to abandon their cars and plans, etc. I was only two when that happened, so I don't remember that one, but I vividly remember 79. Vividly. We got Parkway. That's the grass between the curb and the sidewalk that's technically public. We got the Hawk, which is an intense Chicago wind. It's also Andre Dawson's nickname. And also Ken Harrelson's nickname. We got Muskie, a humongous freshwater fish that allegedly resides in Lake Michigan, but that nobody in Chicago has ever seen or caught. The Woods, that's what we call Cook County Forest Preserves. Also, peaceful plots of wilderness in the city and suburbs where people go to unwind, hold family picnics, and take the kids for a stroll. Places to find anonymous sex, dump a body, or abandon unwanted pets. Then we have people that are associated with Chicago. Chance the Rapper. We've got Oprah. We've got Kanye. We've got the Colonel, Robert McCormick. Blago. You know, I used to live, my ex-wife and I used to live about six blocks away from Blagojevich, and we were living there when the whole crap hit the fan and he got arrested and everything. There was helicopters everywhere every day. It was nuts. We got Big Tuna. Triple J, that's Jesse Jackson Jr. And in the sports world, we've got Ditka. Everybody knows who Ditka is. Sweetness, the late, great Walter Payton. Buddy, he was Buddy Ryan, the 85 defensive coordinator for the Bears. How about Pinners? You know what Pinners is?
What is?
Well, they explain it here. I didn't call it Pinners. For some reason, my friends and I called it Ledge. But Pinners is a front stoop baseball game played by Chicago kids in the pre-video game days. The person at bat whips a rubber ball into the front steps, and the fielders behind him or her try to catch it as it bounces back their way. Singles, doubles, triples, and home runs are determined by where the ball lands, and a catch is an out. We called it Ledge.
Yeah. And I never got that. I just played baseball at the park because I didn't grow up in a place with stoops, really.
Yeah. I grew up right on Addison with a front porch
and a stoop.
Kid. Yep. 16-inch softball, unique to Chicago. I remember we went camping once at a campsite, and it was in Indiana. So we were camping in Indiana, and we always had some clinchers and a few bats in the trunk of the car in case you just wanted to do a pickup game, you know, have a pickup softball game. So we invited some people that we'd met there to play a little softball, and we got the balls and the bats out, and they were like, "What is that?" They didn't know what a 16-inch baseball, a 16-inch softball was. Now, I don't know if they were from Indiana. I don't remember if they were from Indiana proper, which I think more people from Indiana know that we play 16-inch softball here. They may have been from a different part of the country or a different state, and they were just camping and were just completely confused. So, all right, let's take a break here. And let me do this really quick here. Chicagoese, the L. Are cities other than Chicago known for elevated trains and the Loop, which is created the route of the L? Yes, other cities do have elevated trains. I mean, New York has elevated trains. If you've ever seen French Connection, you know that. Yeah. 708, Mario's Italian Lemonade on Taylor Street. Milwaukee Avenue and Elston have the rare occurrence of intersecting at two different locations. Yeah, it's true. 312 area code says cutting pizza in squares helps the crust absorb the grease more evenly. Some customers order it cut in smaller squares, and the effect is even more noticeable. All right, here's the deal. Call in now, 312-981-7200, and the first two people through will be our contestants for yet another round of Know Your Onion. This is when Tom was your host. He's your host, and he will be reading you news headlines, and you have to guess whether they are real or from the comedy newspaper, The Onion. And the majority of the ones that you get, you win, and you get a prize. So it's time for Know Your Onion, which we will do after we take a break here. Here's some weather, and then we will do that. Today it's going to be a couple degrees milder with a low in the mid-40s. Temperatures will begin to rise after midnight. For tomorrow, windy, milder. Morning rain will change to showers in the late afternoon. Highs in the mid-50s. Showers will diminish in the late afternoon, low of 30 at night. Partly cloudy, breezy, much colder on Friday. High in the upper 30s, a low in the upper 20s at night. For Saturday, a chance for morning or light snow or flurries. Chilly, high in the upper 30s. Normal high for that day is usually in the mid-40s. For Sunday, partly sunny, breezy, a little milder. A seasonable high in the mid-40s, partly cloudy overnight, and a low in the low 30s. It's currently 38 degrees at O'Hare. It's 40 at Midway, 40 at the lakefront. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, it's time for Know Your Onion, 312-981-7200.
Lots of folks back east, they say, is leaving home every day, beating the hot old dusty way to the California line. Across the desert sands they roll, getting out of that old dust bowl. They think they're going to a sugar bowl, but here's what they find. Now the police at the port.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday morning. And, yeah, and so we're going to play a little round here of Know Your Onion. We have our contestants, so we'll jump into that. And then we got a Blackhawks Express to play back from an unfortunate game last night. And then we'll wrap up the show with more Chicagoese, Chicagopedia, our town's lexicon of what makes us uniquely Chicago. So there you go. All right, are we ready to play a little Know Your Onion, Tom?
It's time to Know Your Onion.
Amazing. 60,000 people every Wednesday morning just after 4:30. 60,000 people are fit right into this beautiful studio.
Without fail. They could be at home watching Friends right now.
You know, people walking around with turkeys on their heads.
And fezzes.
All right. So Know Your Onion, everybody. This is Tom is your host, and he will read you a news headline. He will read you some news headlines, and you have to decide whether it is a real or it is from The Onion, the satirical newspaper that's funny. Real life news is very strange right now. So sometimes it's very difficult to tell the difference between a real news headline and an Onion news headline. And that's what this thing is about. Okay. Shall we begin, Tom?
We shall.
All right. We have our two contestants. Let's start with Bob. Hello, Bob.
Yes, sir.
Yes. You're on the air. Do you know what The Onion is? Are you ready?
I'm familiar, guys.
Okay. So, the idea is Tom's going to read you a news headline. You have to guess whether it's real or The Onion. All right, Tom, here we go.
All right, we're going to switch it up this time, change the music, so let's get it going.
Wait.
Yeah, the Benny Hill theme.
Wow. All right.
Yeah, let's do this. Okay,
Bob. I feel like slapping an old man repeatedly on the head, on his bald head. All right, go ahead.
All right, Bob, your first headline. The screenwriter of Harriet reveals that studio exec once suggested Julia Roberts played Harriet Tubman. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Can I get a repeat on that?
Sure thing. I'll give you a repeat here.
Okay.
The screenwriter of the feature film Harriet revealed that studio execs once suggested Julia Roberts play Harriet Tubman in the film. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That sounds like an onion.
Let's see. No, that's very real.
Unbelievably, that's real. It's real, and it just shows you how stupid Hollywood has been in the years. All right, you got to get some right here, Bob. You got one wrong.
Yes,
don't get two more wrong, or you lose. Go ahead.
All right, Bob, your second headline. Carlos Santana surprises his wife with a coupon for a free 45-minute guitar solo. Is that real or is that The Onion?
She could get a guitar set at any time. I'm saying that's Onion.
Let's see. Woo-hoo! Very good, Bob.
I love the picture. He's got like a handmade 45-minute guitar solo coupon that he's handing her. It's hilarious.
I'm a gentleman just like Mr. Santana is, so I'm glad I got that when I look good on paper.
All right.
Okay. I'm one for two, right?
Yes. All right, Your next headline here, Bob. An anonymous philanthropist donates 200 human kidneys to the hospital. Is that real or is that The Onion?
Donates 200 human kidneys. That's got to be Onion, right?
Let's see.
Shang-Wing.
Very good.
All right.
All right. One more right, Bob, and you're a winner.
Luminati's, here we come.
All right.
Okay. Let's go for this one. Chicago, the beautiful city of Chicago, goes one day without a shooting. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That sounds like something that would not happen.
So you're going to say Onion?
That's correct.
Nope. That is a real headline from Fox 32.
Real headline. And that was broken. Yep. That was broken last night, blocks away from my apartment.
Yep.
So. Boy, I heard that one. That was not good.
Yep. All right. You still got it. You got one more to go here, and you got to get it right.
Yes, sir.
All right. It all comes down to this. Let's see. Here we go. Your next headline. Pete Buttigieg. The Buttigieg campaign appeals to moderate Republicans by touting low approval among black voters. Is that real or is that The Onion?
One more time, Mr. Hush.
All right. The Pete Buttigieg campaign appeals to moderate Republicans by touting low approval among black voters. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's got to be The Onion. Most blacks are Democrats.
Let's see.
Excellent!
All right, Bob, you got it. You're a winner.
Dr. Pizza. It's right across the street from my apartment. Thank you.
There you go. So it's a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. Congratulations, Bob, and you hang on. Hold the line. Thank you. All right, are we ready for our second contestant?
Yes, we are. Let's do this.
Okay. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Good morning, Nate. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay. Are you familiar with The Onion and all that stuff?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So here it is. Let's begin our second round, Tom.
And let's go back to the classic. There we go. I love it. Okay, Mike, your first headline. Activists in North Carolina aim to change a law allowing people to do anything they want to possums for 5 days each year. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I hope it's The Onion.
Let's see.
Oh, no. No, that's real.
Very real. That's coming to us from Time Magazine. Apparently, there is a law in North Carolina that allows people to basically purge on the possum, the poor possum.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, Mike, 0 for 1, but that's just too weird. Okay.
All right, let's go to the next one. The new Idris Elba wasp species could protect global broccoli crops. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to say real.
Let's see.
Oh, I like that.
Yes, very real.
That's real?
Ooh. Yes, he has a species of wasp.
Named after him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Is there anything that man can't do? Stringer Bell.
I think you mean Stinger Bell.
Oh, man. Hang on a minute now.
All right.
Thank you, folks. I'm here all week.
Yeah. All right. You're 1 for 1, Mike. Or you got one, right. one and one. Okay. Mm-hmm.
All right, your next headline. Let's go into the little bit of history here. Literary historians discover that Hemingway's dad bulk purchased 70,000 copies of The Sun Also Rises to get his son on the bestseller list. Is that real or is that The Onion?
That's The Onion.
Let's see.
Shang-Wei.
Very good.
70,000 copies. All right. Okay, get the next one right, Mike. You're also a winner.
All right.
All right. Let's hop on over to this one. Despite free-flowing kombucha, WeWork tenants feel unease. Is that real or is that The Onion?
I'm going to say it's real.
Let's see.
Wow.
That's true.
Where is that from?
That's coming to us from the Associated Press.
Wow.
Of all places.
Well, Mike, congratulations, my friend. Nice job. You're a winner.
Well, thank you both.
Yeah. You get a Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations, or you can order online at loumalnati's.com. All right, Mike, we need you to hold the line, okay?
Will do. Thank you.
Hang on, buddy. Congratulations to Bob and to Mike. And we will not be playing Know Your Onion next week because I won't be here. Or maybe we will, and we'll play it with who's Brian Noonan, who I believe is filling in for me next week. So it's up to those guys whether they want to do Know Your Onion or not. But I'm off next week, so there you go. All right, let's see. We're going to get back into Chicagoese here and in Chicagopedia, Volume 1 from the Chicago Sun-Times. And we were talking about sports-related things that are very Chicago and how we we talk and speak and represent ourselves in this city. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us. How about this? Thillens. Yeah. The Way Cool Baseball Stadium at Devon and the Sanitary Canal, where wide-eyed kids have gone to play Little League games since forever. The park was built in the 1930s by Mel G. Thillens, who owned and founded the Thillens Check Chasing Service. The Chicago Park District now runs the park under a different name. They changed the name of Thillens? Wow. I didn't know that. I played ball there when I was a kid. How about this very Chicago thing for sports here? Wait till next year. The once common lament of Cubs fans when it became clear the season would not end with a World Series title. The verbal white flag can signal a fan's eternal optimism, frustrated resignation, unbridled anger, sarcastic nature, or general hopelessness. Use has ebbed since the Cubs won a World Series in 2016 after a century drought. More uniquely Chicago things associated with sports here. Rocky, not the fictional boxer, but the owner of the Chicago Blackhawks, Rocky Wirtz, who also owns a piece of the Chicago Sun-Times. Rocky Wirtz, great guy. Helped bring us a cup 2010. We're celebrating the 10th anniversary of that season. This is the 10th anniversary of the season where the Hawks won their first of three cups in a few years. Woo Woo, that's the nickname of Ronnie Wickers, the love him or hate him, fully uniformed Cubs fan who constantly chirps woo after everything he chants at ball games, parties, bars, etc. Not a big fan of the Ronnie Woo Woo. Guy drives me nuts. Cubs fans, see Chads and Trixies, page 55. Brett Favre, lousy former quarterback for the Miami Vikings. Clay Matthews, former Packers player who badly needs a haircut. Aaron Rodgers, boyfriend of Chicago Bears fan Danica Patrick. That's hilarious. And double doink, pitiful field goal miss in 2018 when football was booted by Chicago Bears kicker Cody Parkey. Clunked the upright and then the crossbar, hobbling the Bears. So there you go. All right, more Chicagopedia, more Chicagoese. 312-981-7200. After we give you some weather here, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll wrap up the show. We want to hear from you. What phrases or things about this city make us so unique? What are your favorites? 312-981-7200 for talk or text. So I say welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Skyline studio here on a Wednesday, Wild Card Wednesday, wrapping up Wild Card Wednesday. Who requested David and David?
That's coming to us from Steve.
Wow, it's a great song.
Yeah?
Great song.
Two dudes named David.
Yep. So they're showing the new trailer because they debuted a new trailer for Cats. That's going to be the worst movie ever made. It's truly going to be the worst movie ever made. Oh. And not only is it a terrible musical, but the makeup effects and the special effects are just so creepy.
It's unsettling.
Completely unsettling.
Taylor Swift as a tart cat. I don't really get it.
It's going to be the worst movie ever made.
James Corden is in it, which
adds to the badness of it.
Yeah.
But then people like Ian McKellen, Stringer Bell, Judi Dench.
Why? Isn't this a guy who did Les Mis as well? He did it.
Yes.
I wasn't a fan of that.
No. Tom Hopper. It's going to be so bad. I just looked up on the screen and went, because it's terrifying. And it's just such a bad show.
They should just taught cats to actually sing.
I'd rather watch that. hey, coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich with the opening bell. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. We are talking about Chicagoisms. Here's a bunch more here. If you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200. The second city, initially a derogatory term for Chicago, now a nickname for the country's third largest city, soon to be the fourth or fifth largest.
Yeah.
And number two is the famed improv club and school that's produced some of the best comedians in the business. Chads and Trixies, which we've heard now three times, term for upper middle-class white people in their 20s or 30s, originally from the suburbs, who moved to Chicago, that would be River North, Lincoln Park, and Lakeview, after college. which was a Big Ten university. decent. Describing something that's really good while not getting overly exciting. That's decent.
Like when the weather's good.
Yeah.
Even if it's really quite nice. That's decent. It's decent outside.
Proper nouns. Something Chicagoans aren't very good aren't very good at, with O'Hara Airport, the grocery store chain The Jewels, Mitch Trubinsky, and Soldiers Field are just some of the... the next thing I can't say on the air, we talked about it earlier, it's that, remember that show Jag?
Uh-huh.
And then the opposite of On?
Right.
That's the next word. It's the ultimate Chicago put-down. We got yous, plural of you, as in the two of yous got to get down to the house to go play. The word duh, D-A, as in DeBears. Doing, a one-syllable shortening of doing, as in how you doing, what are you doing? Winter, the long, long season between fall and spring. We might go to Arizona this winter. As an example.
That's something I've noticed, is that Chicago and a lot of the Midwest tends to curve over D's and T's.
Yeah.
Like, it's not water, it's water.
Yeah. Yeah. A guy. Three examples of this. A trusted, skilled, and hard-to-replace practitioner, male or female, of whatever service needs to be rendered. Shave and a haircut, wingtips resold, cheating husband photographed in compromising positions, and so forth. Two, person frequently recommended to friends, relatives, or even casual passerby in need of services rendered. Three, a major reason many Chicagoans will never leave Chicago. It's an idiom. I got a guy. By, B-Y, replaces proper use of the prepositions at or to. Example, I grew up by I grew up by Montrose and Western, or I got to go by the store to buy a half gallon of milk. Get little, leaving somewhere suddenly. Tweaking, telling someone they're full of it. Foo-foo, describing someone who's fake. Goof-ass, silly person. Mikes, those are Air Jordans. Gym shoes. They're not sneakers. They're not tennis shoes. They're gym shoes. Stiff. Drunk. The wedding was fun, but boy, did Dad get stiff. Lousy at one's profession. We got to get rid of that guy. He's a stiff, is an example. And it's also, of course, a dead body. See, now here's, this is a great one. 15, 20 minutes. This is a great term. 15, 20 minutes. The standard answer to any question about how far away something is in Chicago, the answer rarely takes into account complicating factors, say traffic, or that the person asking the question was actually wondering about distance, not time. Here's an example. How far from Sox Park to Midway? 15, 20 minutes.
Well, really, they are asking. And when you, even when you ask about distance, you're asking about time. You, that's what you really want to know.
Art, television, and music. You got the Picasso. You got art. You got the Bean. You got the movie Roll Bounce. You got country, which is a very popular. You got Bozo, and there you go. So that's just some of the stuff. If you can check this out, it was put out by the Chicago Sun-Times, and that's what it's like to live here. All right, let's take a break. Tomorrow we've got Ian Schur with CNET Tech Talk.